This is White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace, part 15, the finale of our campaign. Let's do a quick recap of the state of our first responders and what awaits them in this finale. They have entered the mountains of Verdigris in their attempt to rescue Hank, who has been imprisoned by the antlered king Carnonos, as he is known to some, in his fortress of Verdigris, for the purposes of helping him fulfill his conquest against other gods in their other dimensions. Roddy Lops, no conditions. Mike Waitley Hesters, obsessed with a mountain. Dallas Bartmoss, agent of Prism. Ellis Fogarty, no conditions. However, when it comes to crowns, Roddy has three. Mike has one. Dallas has five, and Ellis is fine. Ellis has only used one crowd.
That's 5 12 pluses today, baby. Mm-hmm. I don't care. There we go.
We are going to begin this session by jumping right into answering the second question on the mountain rescue. How can the Fortress of Verdigris be breached? Complexity 4. Once our responders answer this question, they will have access to the Undercroft, the Inner Halls, and the Throne Room of the Fortress of Verdigris. We're starting this way because last session, Mike Waitley was captured and taken to the Fortress of Verdigris, while Roderick and Dallas and Rizeki and Greeley were watching from their hiding place. So this is kind of important to open up this location anyway, cinematically. We have 10 available clues to explain. One of them, Dallas still needs to define, because it's I think I owe it to you, don't I? It just says clue-Dallas. Is that a
you
clue?
You owe it to me.
I owe it to you. Okay. I'll grant that in just a moment. Can you remind me the circumstances of where that clue came from?
It was from investigating around the perimeter of the village, swamp village.
No, that was the silhouette of the tall woman.
That's right.
And so
was that conversation after? Who did I have a conversation with?
Basketman? Yeah, it was Basketman.
Yeah.
Was it Basketman?
Yeah, because that's what I did after the swamp thing.
Didn't you have a verbal scene with Mike?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we had a scene with Mike and like you.
But I for that off. for that one, we participated in mine. So Mike did the wait.
Yeah, Mike that's didn't ask.
Yeah, that's Mike the mist can be manipulated to form gaseous walls. I think.
And then we had, so just, yeah, so to recap all the clues we have available to us, we still have the carved arch doorway that is at the Prism headquarters that was used to open up during the Not Deer situation. We saw the crackling green arcs of electricity making a web between the trees. Dallas and one other survivor made it off the mountain in Finland with the help of a strange stairway. Greeley is an expert warrior. Strange markings in trees indicating directions. Mike believing that the village is turning into frog people. The silhouette of a tall woman in a flowing white dress watching from a distance with no facial features and a crown, a circlet of green flame. The mist can be manipulated to form gaseous walls. Ellis is preferred over Waitley. And then it just says Dallas. It's a clue for Dallas. So was that a clue you somehow got in the Forest of Bronze? Or as like...
Did Dallas roll like a 12 plus?
He may have. Either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It says I owe you a clue. And already the ones from vulnerable scenes were given out. So that doesn't mean it's a clue you define. So I do owe you a clue anyway. Let me just throw something into this. I'm going to operate under the assumption that it was just from looking around while you were here in the Forest of Bronze. Let's see here. Most of these I've pulled from mountain clues. So like these are all pretty gnarly, and I'm just trying to find a good one. Yeah, I'm gonna operate under the assumption that this is a 12 plus from your role. I could be wrong, but either way, we're just gonna operate on that assumption and just go with it. So while you hit the ground and like ran into your hiding place right before you watch Mike get snatched by these like bulb stalker creatures and taken towards the fortress down the Black Glass Road, you kind of threw yourself into this area, and there's a little branch on that, like a little offshoot that coming off of one of like the bronze trees, that you notice something is hanging from it. Little silver chain with a small locket. Indeed, like looking around, there are several like trees amidst the forest of bronze that just seem adorned with things taken from your world. However, this locket, it's open. Dallas, the picture is someone you love. Who is it?
Oh fuck. It's Dallas. No, I'm kidding. no. It's Dallas's husband from the Christmas episode that we did. It's Dallas's husband. Yeah.
What's his husband's name?
Roberto.
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 Roberto Bartmas?
Roberto Bartmas.
Aw.
Roberto Bartmas. Nay, no, I'm kidding. It
Yeah.
doesn't have the full nay.
Does he hate it when you call him Bobby Bartmas?
Bobby Bartmas, yeah. Yep.
Incredible. Very good. All right. Well, in that case,
B squared.
we have 10 clues available. Complexity 4. How can the fortress be breached? I'll remind everybody. You've only seen the fortress from a distance, but what you can see from that said distance is a tall, spindly castle perched high on a mountain cliff. No visible entrances except for large arched windows in the various high towers. I figure we've recapped the clues. If anyone wants to kick off some possible theorizing for how to breach the fortress, hit it, Wes.
All right, daddies and dadettes. What we've got here is a classic case of Mike Hester's Whateley. This whole time has been beleaguered, plagued by stairways. But as you can tell, by only Dallas and one other survivor made it off that mountain in Finland with the help of a strange stairway, that these stairways aren't your enemy, Mike. They've been trying to lead you to your destiny, to your fate, to where you're supposed to be going, which is here in this castle. So that's one way. So we have to keep our eyes out for the stairs. That's how we go. Obviously. Obviously.
I believe Daniel also might have had an
I
idea.
have one, and it can go with that one as well. But mine is using a couple things. One is the carved archway with the weird symbols around it. That's stone. Okay, there's a bunch of those, and they're activated by using arcs of green electricity. That's the green. That's that one. And Ellis has a spear that can create those arcs of electricity. And so it can open it up just like the stone can open up, just like mist can be manipulated to form gaseous walls. They can also make these bronze walls. And so using the spear, Ellis can open it, and on the other side of it is stairs, but the stairs don't go like up into the mountain. They can go to like Mike Whateley's destiny. How many is that? That's five. Is that four or five? Two, three.
It's
Oh, and
four.
the strange markings in the trees show where the archway is.
Oh,
Okay, that's
nice.
five. Just to recap, just to make sure we're all on the same page. So these carved arch doorways are like passages between places, and they can be activated with those green arcs of electricity between the trees. That's kind of indicative of they can be powered. And the remind so wait, so where does the gaseous walls fit into that again? You can turn it into like bronze walls.
Oh, well, just like how the fog can solidify into a barrier, it's the same with the wall of the cliff mountain can be desolidified and go the
Oh,
other way, and so
gotcha.
we can
Oh,
walk
okay.
through it.
Ah, gotcha. So air turns into to something solid. Something solid can be turned into passage. Gotcha. I like that. And that those then open to the strange stairway that goes between places, not necessarily. So it's kind of like the stairs aren't inherently attached to the mountains of verdigris. The stairs are they're liminal, they're transitional spaces between different realms and different places. Fascinating. Okay. That's five. You want to just stick with those five?
Yeah,
Then,
I think I don't. I can't work any of the other ones in.
yeah. B, chaotic thoughts.
I mean, I feel like Wes and Daniel got it in one, honestly, because that's pretty sick. I can't think of another cooler way to add more stuff. I think these might be for our final question.
Very good.
Yeah, the others don't seem relevant, even though they're pretty cool clues.
All right, I'm gonna do what I love to do when only really two people contribute the majority. Each of you roll a d6.
Yeah. Should I go bone or go bone or green die?
Ooh. I was gonna, you know my reflex is bone, but green is
Bone.
really appropriate here.
Yeah, it feels
Roll green.
appropriate.
I got
Yeah.
a four. If I get the plus one, it gives me a five.
That's not bad because I got a five, so
Ten.
That's a 10. Flat 10. Theory's correct.
Ten.
So you know that
Cool.
you need to use these transitional spaces to access the fortress of Verdigris. Of course, there are other matters currently at hand. Ellis, you had been inside your home away from home, attending to various matters while the rest of the first responders were out at the swamp village, speaking with people before setting out into the swamp and then the forest itself. What preparations were you undertaking? What work did you complete while you were away, wrapping up what you were ever you were doing?
He was taking the armor that he stole from one of the sarcophagi that was from a child of one of these others, and he was like modifying it so that it fits him. And so he was working on that, and I believe if it's once per session, let me double check. I think it is once per
Oh.
session. Each session. Each session, I can ask the keeper to reveal a clue that's related somehow specifically to the phenomenon, which I guess would be the others here. And so that's what he's going to
Fantastic.
do.
Oh, and the final question that you have now unlocked is where in the fortress has Hank been imprisoned? Let me add that to your list. That is also a complexity four. And by answering that, you resolve the mountain rescue by confronting Karnonos, rescuing Hank, and returning safely to your world. Let's add that to the list. And you're going to add a clue. Gotcha.
And he would use the mirror to locate where they are, and then he would come out of some stairwell. But the stairs would be like just trees that are shaped like
Sure.
branches. So he would be walking down some branches to hook up
Incredible. So
with Dallas.
let me give you a clue that you owe since you get to use that freebie. Very smart use of these moves here, related to everything at hand. I mean, there's a lot of ones I could easily choose here. Let's see. Which one will I do? Oh, I mean, I'll let you kind of narrate how this manifests. But I'll give you this clue. I mean, this also works very well for the Tomb of Mirrors and the whole thing we just said with the stairs, that there is evidence somewhere, visible evidence that Ellis has seen, or knows somehow. I'll let you kind of narrate what that looks like, of a multitude of other dimensions similar to the mountains of Verdigris, places that you can only barely understand, like the fields of Amaranth, the Court of Shadows, the Cinnabar Wastes, the Sunken Kingdom, a myriad of different dimensions, all very similar to the mountains. That is your clue. You're muted.
He got this from those corridors, and he's found rooms where he's found mirrors that aren't black, obsidian black, but are brilliant turquoise and scarlet red. And so he's seen these mirrors, but when he has looked into those mirrors, he can't understand. It's just too abstract, and he ends up getting like a migraine. So he's stayed away from them, but he's seen these mirrors.
In the Forest of Bronze, Dallas, Roderick, after watching Mike get captured, one of the wood devil priests in their ceremonial robes lifted a whistle of like a strange bone-like flute up to its knot mouth and made a horrifying sound out of it, accompanied then by the approaching distant shriek barks of knot hounds that are now hunting through the forest in search of possible prey. They grow ever closer when the sound of metallic leaves and vines crunching under boot. You spin around, and indeed, Ellis walking down some branch steps from a transitional passage to join you. Ellis, things look bad. You enter the scene. Mike's nowhere to be found. A procession of patrol through the woods. They blew the hunting whistle. That's never a good sign. And you hear the distant approaching beasts that are on the hunt now.
I think he would ask. You guys want to run or you want to stand and fight? And he's wearing like this bronze armor, and he's got this like spear. You guys want to stay and fight, or you guys want to run?
Who the fuck are you?
It's Ellis. I got on his helmet.
Okay. Maybe we can take a couple out as we get the fuck out of here. Okay, we have to. They took Mike.
Yeah, I don't think we can just stand and fight all these things while Mike's getting taken. God knows where.
We can be crafty, though.
You have an idea?
I'm going to look over at Raseki, who's like probably like behind a tree, just like has like a knife and like a assault rifle. And then I just hold up two flashbang grenades and say, we can flash and bash them. Is that something that you say, looking at Raseki?
Raseki just says, no, we've never said that before, but I understand exactly what you mean.
That's so fucking cool. Yeah, we're going to flash and bash him.
We got to find a new name for that, sir.
Oh.
Who took Mike?
These fucking
plant.
A plant, honestly.
The wood devil plant.
We call those
the VFTPs. Venus Flytrap people. And so that means we got to go. He starts pulling you. We got to go this way. We got to get to the gateway.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Really took him.
As a reminder, Daniel, because you weren't here for the last session, I, in my infinite generosity for the finale, bequeathed everybody an advance that they could all take, even without enough experience. So you can take an advance for Ellis. I believe everybody else already got their advances last time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was generous and figured for the finale, everyone gets an advance of their choice. So very good.
Oh yeah, I have to make that change. Sorry. I am no longer a dumb bitch at minus one. I have a reason of zero. Aww. I've learned something.
Beautiful. So as I understand it, you are making a fighting retreat to cover yourselves while Ellis is trying to get you all to Gateway. Okay. Very good. Very good indeed. Looking out. Go ahead.
I'll take study the others, which allows me to speak some of their language, and they always will try to kill me. But it will get. I think it says if I'm doing a dangerous move with them, I get an advantage.
Yes, you do.
But you can predict basically, their I can understand some of their that might help.
That will definitely help with. They'll definitely help. And I'm going to throw this out there just for added drama and cinematic tenseness. As the sounds of the knot hounds grow ever closer through the metallic trees, in the distance from the fortress of Verdigris, there are shapes moving out of the high arched windows. And we see cinematically that the hunters are mounting up, exiting from these high windows to come down and also join the called hunt. Upon what do the hunters ride? That's a question for you all.
Giant boll weevils?
What's a boll weevil?
You know what a boll weevil is? So like a boll weevil is like, let me see if I can get a picture of it. So it's a bug. It's like a beetle.
Mm-hmm.
That like
I've seen these things.
You
yeah.
find it in like they're attracted to cotton and like certain types of flowers. They come from Mexico and they fly up through like the south and like along the eastern, like they're specifically a southern beetle.
Gotcha.
That just like their entire life cycle is spent like going from like all across the southwestern United States and Mexico and traveling and trekking to like more like temperate climates and finding flowers and like cotton to like ingratiate themselves in and eat. They were one of the main contributions to the South being affected by the Great Depression.
And I would say they're covered, they're draped in these very long flowing green fabric that kind of fans out like tails as they fly,
And I think that, you know, the boll weevils, how they have the little proboscis. I think the top of it is armored like a horse, almost like a decorative battle. And it's like in bronze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Totally like patinaed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Put that on your hood ornament.
Yeah. I can't emphasize about like how large these creatures are. They could probably eat a person if they tried to.
Incredible. I love that. They've taken to the air. Let's see. How do I want to handle this? So, Dallas, it was your idea to, what do you say, flash and smash or flash and bash?
Flash and bash.
Paint that for me. Tell me, give me a little bit of that. Tell me what that looks like.
I think what, so we got our shooters, right? We got our people that are like, they're in the cut. Like they're really good when it comes to like attacking and stuff like that. And that's Ellis and Rizeki. Those are those two. Is Greeley here with us? Greeley?
Yeah, Greeley's here.
Well, what's up, Greeley? Greeley. Yeah, so like Greeley and Rizeki and Ellis seem to be like pretty capable of like going and like fighting people off. So them maintaining like a cup offense, which is they rotate essentially as they move forward, they rotate covering each other's flanks. While this guy and Roddy take the flashbangs. And kind of like fuck with these people a little bit, throw the flashbangs and then start making disoriented noises and stuff like that. That kind of thing of like how you'd freak out wild animals, make yourself bigger and stuff, but like running and ducking into like different undergrowth and making weird noises and then trying to move, just trying to discombobulate, disorient these hunters.
Love that. All right. It's going to be the dangerous move for you, Dallas. What are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid that Dallas is going to roll their ankle in a hole.
It's worse than that. Greeley will die defending you while your friends can get you to safety.
Greeley.
This is going to be, I'd say plus composure.
Okay.
And no disadvantage from Prism.
Got it. And I'll mark my flashbang grenades.
Smart. Take advantage. Very good.
To take advantage. Okay. That is going to be a 6 plus a 2, because my two lowest were 2s. A 6 and a 2 plus composure. That is a 9.
That is a 9. Very good. You will do it. There's a complication or a cost. I'll describe what it looks like. So you begin to toss out these flashbangs into the forest. When they go off, it's very strange to watch how light ripples off of metallic trees. So in an abundance, the light from a flashbang, it's really hard to not in some way still experience the flashbang because that light refracts off of every surface in this forest. But you are throwing it out there, the shapes of the Knothounds darting in the near and closing distance, still slightly not visible in the haze. You can hear their shrieks, but they are deterred. There is covering. You are laying it down. I think indeed, I'll just keep it pretty simple with what you narrated. In your fighting retreat, you get your foot snagged on a metallic vine, and you turn in a really bad way, and you feel just a sharp pain just jolt through your lower calf and throughout your foot. You can take sprained ankle as a condition, but Riziki quickly grabs you by the shoulder, and will continue to help guide you back as you guys are successfully laying down the covering to make your retreat deeper in and following Ellis.
I'm going to go ahead just because it's very fitting. I'm going to put on a crown
Very good.
and just narrate that maybe even Dallas was hyping themselves up and looked over and one of those bronze leaves saw that all occur, essentially all of that
In the
occur
reflection?
in the
Oh, very
reflection
cool.
of the and then
That's
notice and
sick.
like took note of the ankle of like the where the hole was just looks at Rezeki and the rest and says, "Let's go." And then pulls the pins and starts like throwing the flashbang and then start running.
Fucking cool. What do you, what crown?
A flashback of your fondest memory of working with the U.S. Forest Service.
Do you want to do that now or do you want to hold it off?
I will do it now because I
Fantastic.
think as we see Ellis running with this bronze armor and this bronze spear, and we see Greeley hopping from like bronze leaf to bronze leaf and like tackling into these hunters and like stabbing them really quickly and then keep moving. We see Rezeki shooting with like a silenced automatic rifle. We see Roddy and Dallas running like almost like deer through a forest of just like running straight, taking a left, crossing, zigzagging over each other. We go back to Camp Wattamacamuck, which is a in disrepair Boy Scout camp near White Mountain, where you can obviously hear an ambulance in the background from Connecticut Avenue. But no, Jesus Christ, we get it. You're a fire truck. But anyways, Camp Wattamacamuck. Is this Boy Scout camp that's in the middle of being repaired by the U.S. Forest Service and Bart Moss Solutions. But we did a U.S. Forest Service like retreat weekend there, like helping like clean up the area and like repair up the area. And there was a capture the flag night at night where we all had like high-vis flags between two teams. And you can see that there was like Roderick and Mike. I think it was like one of the few times that Mike and Dallas were like for the most part, we're just like we're avoiding each other and just like grimacing at each other, but like are actually like helping out with each other. Like they were on latrine duty one time. They were in the cafeteria having to work on like breakfast together. And so we just see these moments and just like this camaraderie and seeing like Dallas run through the trees and being like trying to mess with Hank McBride, who's just like has a flashlight and it's just like you're it. And it's like, no, it's capture the flag. It's not flashlight tag. It's like, I don't care. Like, I don't care. And we're seeing that intercut with all this, like, this combat and everything.
I think that's sick. Fantastic. Mike. What does it feel like inside one of these VFTPs, as they have been named?
It is unpleasant at best because like Because not only like you could see like through like the bulb and whatnot, like there isn't like there's holes because the VFD he doesn't want to kill whatever it captures, rather keep it alive. So it's more like a cage than anything that like that is mobile. It's moving through, but still like Mike is getting bounced around and jostled in there. Like his arms like go through like one of the holes and whatnot, and like it's like kind of like it's stuck a little, and it's just like it's just unpleasant.
It's very hard to discern what's happening outside your confinement. You just hear the whooshing of wind. You feel jostled around, probably more than a little sick, just from the constant motion of this thing swinging through the forest. You hear the distant crashings of thunder that grow ever closer, the flickers of surreal green light that penetrate the semi-translucent plant matter of the bulb. And then things get loud and then very quiet. Quiet and dark. You're in absolute darkness. And then everything stops moving. You feel your captive carrier come to a slow and easing stop. And then, with the wet ruffle of a pile of autumn leaves being disturbed, the bulb opens up and deposits you to your knees on a hard stone floor. Looking up, you are in a vast circular chamber with arched windows that look out to the green, surreal skies of the mountains of Verdigris. And directly in front of you is a large throne of ancient bronze coated in a patina. Seated in it, towering over you, you see the shadowed form of Karnonos, the antlered king, as lightning flashes outside the window, illuminating him in the bronze fixtures with a sickly greenish energy, his black eyes looking directly at you as his arms just rest at the sides of his chair, staring at you. His head just tilts ever so slightly, the crown of black antlers. Immense, but as light as air, it seems, just move with him. Let's paint the scene about the throne room. What simple trophies has Karnonos adorned his throne room with that fill you with a deep dread?
There is a corpse sickle. It is a collection, like almost like a rat king of bodies. That were encased in molten bronze that sit statuesque, like on either side of the throne. It's just like this writhing mass of bodies that had boiling hot bronze poured on top of them. And it's just encased in their final moments.
I think just what makes Mike particularly the most nervous is, besides like that sort of bronze statue next to it, there is like this sort of plaque of like name badges and whatnot from various companies, like because like each prey must be accounted for, even though that they are all in within the statue. And a lot of them are for Forest Ranger badges.
And with that, there's captured weapons. Some of them are bizarre, and we don't even know what they are. There's twisted blades and handles, but we do recognize some yellow painted Forest Service chainsaws that are up there as well.
And I think on the walls, far away from his throne, almost like a grand dining hall, you see mounted jaws and parts of skulls, and they still have flesh on them, perfectly preserved. Some of them are humanoid, some of them are not, but you know definitely, you can tell by the teeth and the still perpetually wet tongues that sort of loll out that they're human.
Parnonos regards you impassively with those black eyes amidst the featureless white face. I have to ask you, Mike, this close, we have a long-standing question. Is that his face or is that a mask? What does
It's not.
Mike think?
This close, and with all sort of this obsession with being seen, Mike takes a look into the sort of inky black abyss for what the eyes are. And there's nothing staring back, because, of course, it has to be a mask.
Has to be a mask. That is a really great answer that that weirdly aligns with something I had planned for this session in a way I didn't think about. So that's actually gonna be really fun. Oh, and just like I'll just say this for listeners, I'll post this in the chat here. Not sure if I've mentioned this before, but I know Daniel's direct inspiration for this King figure was like art of some of the elves from the game Simbarum, which I'll just post this one specifically. Yeah, it's real cool. That is absolutely the vibe of what you're looking at. Those hollow pits regard you, and you hear that voice emanate out from it, more real and present than any other time you've heard it before, as Karnonos just says, "Waitley."
Yes. There must be a reason that I'm still breathing, is there not? You're a very great hunter. So, what do you want from me?
Want. I want for nothing, Waitley. I am Karnonos. I take all. I hunt everything. All there is in creation is within the grasp of me and my hunters. But in all of my torturous existence, I have never successfully captured a Waitley.
God, I'm gonna do something really stupid. I have a custom move.
With the Waitley camera.
Yeah. What happens if I were to try to take a picture of Carnonos?
Fascinating.
Yeah. This is just
Well,
a bad idea.
one might say, but I'll let you do it because it'll reveal clues.
Oh. Yeah, so I think like as like before like it's as though the audience's camera never really stayed when it's on mic, it never really goes below like the belt and whatnot, because like the Wheatley camera has been sort of tied and appropriated with not, like ropey knots, as though to like never leave mic again, as it were, the last time he used this. And like there is a hope for Mike, that there's a reason why this entity has not captured Whately before, is that they have had access to objects power like this camera to remove themselves from this reality. And he hopes that either it'll remove him from this situation, or that at the very least provide him some sort of semblance of insight into what this being before him is.
Now, I'm going to tell you something right now before you make a roll. Because I'm going to, this is one of the first of a few offers I've thought about.
Oh.
You can roll. You can roll as normal, and we'll follow what the dice happen. And if you roll a miss, the thing I'm thinking of will happen anyway. If you roll a hit, you get clues. Hey, that's, that per the nature of the move. If you willingly right now choose to have this be a miss and fail, you will permanently lose access to this move. However, something very interesting will happen. Something extremely interesting will happen.
Can I get a hint?
It ain't bad for you.
I think this is a good point to lose this move then. I'll take the miss.
We see that you bring the camera out in front of you. And there is just the bright flash of the camera going off. We cut away back to the Forest of Bronze. We see the group running through. The sounds of the Knothounds is further away. You've been covering your escape, but overhead, a few dark shadows pass of hunters doing a scan above. Ellis, where did you lead the group to as you're running through the forest?
I'm heading to the arch. Wherever the arch is that I know,
Yeah, you
I'm
find
heading
it.
to the arch to activate it.
You're there. You're there. It's an arch very similar to the ones you guys have seen back on your side. However, it does not have the green energy that glowing through its cracks. It glows white. And there, yeah, you are here in front of an arch. What do you do?
He has a spear that has this green inner the green crackling electricity,
Just
and
you.
he basically shoots. It's got two charges, and so he shoots the electricity into the door to make it open, and I will mark a box on that.
Very good. I'm gonna say that this is the dangerous move. However, this does count as a phenomena because just the entire place you're in is a phenomena. So you do get advantage on this. What are you afraid of happening here?
I think the big fear is that it doesn't go to where he thinks it's going to go. It goes someplace
Oh.
like worse.
Yeah, it's worse than that. You're actually, in your haste, you don't do the proper procedure and you actually break this door, and you render it inoperable. So you're going to roll plus sensitivity.
Well, it's already an 11 with an advantage. What is Ellis's? So 12.
12. You'll get an extra benefit. Go ahead and narrate what happens while I think on your advantage. Narrate this scene of Ellis opening this gate.
The buzzing of the massive boll weevils, the weevils, the bugs. It's thrown up all kinds of like dust and detritus. And so he hits the spear against the archway, and green electricity just flows all over it, and we see the stone just kind of like turn into gas and turn into empty air, and he just yells like, "Come on!" And we see Greeley and Roszeki and Dallas and Roddy just like running towards it as the hunters are circling above on the giant beetles.
I like that a lot. Here's what your advantage is going to be. I think transiting through this place, I will require no rolls because, you know, they're like, the last time y'all took stairs, everyone else was having a bad time trying not to go insane. This time, I'll have your carryover just be that it's pretty stable and easy for everyone else to travel through that isn't Ellis. You walk through this open passage, just a blinding white light that you all rush into. When you first traveled to the Mountains of Verdigris from the material world, it was extremely disorienting. It felt like your brain could not contain the angles and geometries of the space you were in, and your own thoughts were cutting at the very edges of your skull. Something has stabilized, or maybe this is a more stable means of passage. You don't know. You can't know. This is beyond anything you are able to even guess at. But you're aware, more aware than you were before. Simple question, gang. What's it look like? What do you see in this space between spaces?
All of those strange symbols, the ones that got drawn on Mike's car, the things we've seen in trees, the things we see here, they swirl around us, just flashing like tiny little flashbangs, just a little quietly as we go along.
In the distance, there's other stairwells with other people walking through them. And as you pass by, you can see there are different, like almost like holes, like looking at, like you're inside with all this, like kind of like how the energy and everything like that. It's like you're inside of a cheese grater and somebody put like an RGB light inside of a cheese grater and it's just flashing green a bunch. And you're just walking around, you're seeing all this, and we see flashes of like it seems like an old wooden shop with a family of cannibals. And then there's like, you know, another hole of like this great concrete tower that breaches through the sky. There's another hole of like people just gorging on ice cream. There's another hole of like a Western shootout about to happen with a kid with very like gilded pistols. All of these different things as you just keep running and running and just miasmic closing in on each other and opening up.
Ellis is reluctant to look back because he's afraid of what he might see, but so he's kind of like braced for it. And when he looks back, he sighs a sigh of relief when he sees the doorway closed behind us, because he's afraid the others would follow. So he's making sure the door's shut, and he didn't know it was going to shut. So he's pretty pleased.
I think with all these scenes of people also seemingly traveling through this space, I think a couple of them are trying to get your attention. People that you don't recognize, some folks in suits, various time periods. But you do recognize some of the items that they have on them. That camera that Mike had. Another sort of like bulky equipment of like a video recorder. Just seemingly trying to take a look at you, trying to get your attention, because your people here too. And they have not seen people for a very long time.
As you are all ascending, descending, moving flat, it's you don't want to focus on how you're transitioning on these stairs, because they look like stairs, but if you look at them, you start to realize that they have no dimension to them, and you can't tell if it's up, down, sideways, left, right, or just straight ahead. Walking through this space to another door that awaits you, glowing green. There is a sudden feeling that washes through all of you. There is a flash of white that briefly replaces the green light coming from the doorway. You all smell burning sulfur for like the briefest second. And you get this sense of derealization, like if you were to put words to it, like your soul for a brief moment slightly goes out of alignment with your body. It's a out-of-body floating sensation that ripples over you. And have you ever just had like some part of your body just like pop, right? And it's like, it doesn't hurt, but like it really just feels like, oh, that felt gross, whatever that just was. That's kind of like the sensation that accompanies that. And you all feel as if something very big just happened, but you cannot explain what that, where you're getting that impression from. And you all go towards the door. Michael, you took a photograph. The flash powder ignited into a blinding white light. You felt the camera crack in between your hands, shattering the lens, breaking the box, falling away into component parts. It's hard to say because of the flash, but maybe a part of you hopes that you saw, despite the impassive mask and hollow sockets, somehow a look of surprise coming from Karnonos as the flash went off. You feel bad. That is the best way to fit the words into your understanding of reality. It is like the frame of your body and emotions cannot properly wrap around the sensation it is feeling and just summarizes to an all-encompassing but still not quite fitting bad. It lasts for a second, like a brief sensation of just pure wrongness, sickness, burning. Again, you cannot pin what it feels like. If you think on it too closely, and relatively you can't, because it's so fleeting. And then it passes. And you're in nothing. No, not nothing. You're just blinded by the intensity of the flash. There's just a heavily phosphor smear across your eyes from the brightness that is beginning to just burn away into that orange, pink, red phosphor haze that accompanies flashes that is just slowly fading, but you really still cannot make out any details of where you currently are. How does Mike feel at the moment?
I don't think he can decide whether or not he feels like he did the right thing or the wrong thing yet. It's just like whatever he did was significant. And it makes all of his previous achievements worth nothing.
The haze starts to pass. At first, you feel cold. Not the cold of winter, just cold. Not enough to sink into your bones and make you shiver and fear the possibility of your body shutting down. It's just cold. The cold of nothing. The cold that exists everywhere and nowhere. You come to your senses. And it takes a while, because where you are is very dark. Around you, mists and shadow that you can barely discern anything beyond, just vague outlines of massive shapes and floating islands in the distance. Welcome to the Fragrant Void, Michael Whateley.
Oh, god damn it.
I'm gonna steal directly from the between.
Oh, yay.
Paint the scene. In what ways are you not yourself while you are in this realm?
For folks listening, I don't think anyone has seen my version of the Fragrant Void really all that much. When you are here, you become linked to your true self, your sort of perception of who you are and who you might be. Mike Whateley Hestus. He still appears to be human, which is something that he's thankful for. But with every step he takes, if you were to look at him, he does not look like Mike Hestus at all. But rather, he takes the forms of his ancestors, each one shifting into the next. It's very discombobulating when you're height shifts every few seconds, or when you can't quite see out of one eye, or it just, your clothes change to a fashion that you're not quite very familiar with.
I think there's also that same sense of depersonalization, this being a half step off from your own soul. And so it makes whatever movement here is feel very strange.
I think there's like trailings of the Mike Hestus, like pre Michael Whateley. I think we can see trailings of Mike, just like a kind of like a blur as this true Mike walks forward. We can see some faint remnants of the old Mike.
We see in the distance, as Mike is taking it all in, storms where every time there are lightning strikes, you can see figures, monolithic, titanic in being and shape and form in the far distance. But their form collapses in on itself and swirls and then shapes and changes it. Every time the lightning strikes, they look different. Is it the same being? Is it multiple different beings moving at a breakneck pace? Who knows?
You are all of them. There is no Michael Whateley. There is just Whateley, all encompassing, all forming, waiting across the ripples of time to complete a glorious purpose. You are the vessel for, and all of that leaves you, all of that sensation leaves you, and Michael returns. The sensation of your identity fully locks into place, no disorientation, as like water, all the other ancestors, that sense of their perspective, the sense of the weight Lee's bearing down on you just vanishes in an instant. You feel warmth at your back. A faint, pleasant warmth, like lying out in the sun. And you hear a voice behind you that says,
"Be gone, Vrylakas. Scions of Proteus, return to me, Michael."
And you look over your shoulder, and standing behind you, arms clasped behind his back, there is a man in a golden suit with a mask of the sun. And let's take a break. Dallas, Ellis, Roderick, Grayley, and Rozeki, you emerge from the archway inside the Undercroft, the Fortress of Verdigris. It is a space very similar to Daniel's background, actually. Ancient arch chambers of green stone that glow with a surreal energy. Whispers and distant screams rippling through the air, distorted as if they were underwater. And parts of the Undercroft have collapsed. Bottomless pits that just fall into an inky infinity. Let's paint the scene. This space feels like it's being spiritually crushed beneath the weight of the fortress above. What whispers seep through the cracks at the border of this world? What do they promise you should you join them?
Ooh.
Go ahead, Gaudic.
You can go home again. You know, you don't have to take this risky path ahead of you. If you just give up now, you reclaim what you have lost. All of those decades, all of those years. They won't be gone again.
Ooh. I think you hear it blows past you all.
What do you want? It's right here. Just a little closer.
Run, they're coming. Run. Run. Who are you? They're coming. Who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you?
You emerge in the Undercroft.
Roderick is like hands on his knee. He's like gasping. He's like catching his breath. He's like,
Jesus Christ. Oh my God, I should have been doing cardio before this. Oh, Jesus.
That was really good. That was really good. No, yeah, you did like a like what was that? Like a 18-minute mile? That's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't time's fake, man. I don't know what was going on. Ellis, are we somewhere that's like we can talk? Is that I just realized.
I think they can hear us. Keep it down.
All right, we'll keep it down. Okay, we're in.
I just don't know what they are.
Oh, cool. Cool, cool, cool. Neither do I. Okay. Fabulous.
I don't know where the Venus Flytrap people took Mike, but I think I know where we can find your friend Hank.
I mean, if Mike is still alive, I would guess they're probably in the same spot. Like if it's where they hold prisoners, right? That would make sense. Right?
Well, it depends on who's holding them.
It's one fortress. Like, should...
No. It's not just one fortress. It's like the stairs.
Ah, fuck. It's like the... St- stairs. Okay. That's fine. That's fine. Everything wants to kill us anyway. What's the difference? We'll find one, then we'll find the other, and then we'll get the fuck out of here.
I don't care how tasty something looks. Don't eat anything. Don't put any of this stuff in your mouth, okay?
Yeah.
Greeley, don't eat anything.
Really, really.
Yeah, not even a bug, dude. I know. I know. It's rough. We'll get when we get out of here.
Is that a segue into an answer, a question that I just heard?
I think so, yes.
Okay. As to, all right, I'm listening. Where in the fortress has Hank been imprisoned? We're taking a stab at the final one. You got 6 clues.
I think we can use them all. If I struggle with one, but I think B and Wes can pull that one around. Okay, so he's Hank. I don't know about Mike, but Hank was not captured by the Antler King. Instead, Hank was captured by the tall woman in the flowing dress with the circlet of green flame, who just happened to be the consort to the drowned god, or the crown of seaweed. And Greeley's people were that god's people, like the devil, like the wood devils were to some other god. And so that's why Mike believes that the village is turning into frog people, is because the spirits of Greeley's people are still there. And the human refugees just kind of are overlapped on top of it. And so this was all Greeley has guided, and Ellis doesn't know this, has guided Ellis to bring Whately here. That's what the woman wanted. And so the multiple dimensions similar to the mountains is just all these kingdoms that are losing to this this Antler King. And that brings us to the trees adorned with the various trophies and lockets and things like that. What was the idea behind that?
I think it was these sort of lures from all of these different entities that want to capture people. It's that this and it's I think Wes, you mentioned something about them almost like a mocking thing, kind of like how the Fae want to lure you in, and also it's just a glimpse of home, but you're never actually going to get back to there. It's a glimpse of who you love, but you're never going to get back there, but it makes you want to get close enough to get snatched.
Now, that's all fine and good. Nothing you just said establishes where. Just that, like, there's, like, a contextual detail.
No, it's in her tower. She has a she has a tower here. Yes.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
She has, like, a – she's a trophy, right? Mm. And so there's a tower that she – of this fortress that's hers. And so in Ellis's mind, he was underneath it. So he kind of knows where it is. But for answering this question, it's – that's the that's the background as to why Hank.
Now we did establish though that like he was imprisoned by the Antler King, so I guess it's easy enough to say with this theory, because like, you know, we saw him get taken, we saw him before the Antler King. It's very clear that the Antler King took Hank for his own purposes. However, it sounds like to me the way to incorporate both of these is just as simple as saying that it's not that she took him, it's that they are in the same place, and she was reaching out to you guys to give to help give you the impression of like,
yeah, she's enemies. Yeah, yeah, she's enemies with this.
She's an enemy. Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, I like that.
That does account for all 6 of your clues. Okay. Yeah. Any other thoughts from anyone?
Yeah, it's this is kind of a weird place because like I think this just includes the more dimensions. I think like multiple kingdoms are here. And so like when one thing happens in one dimension, it affects the others. So like it's hard to say like who's a prisoner of whom and whatnot.
Oh, that's very fascinating. Yeah.
So like even though like the Antler King may have initially kidnapped Hank, like he could be like a prisoner of like one of these other kingdoms in reality.
Oh, fascinating. I love that. That's cool. Fun. That's very cool. Okay. Well, it'll be a +2 to the roll, whoever wants to make it. Final theory roll of the game, ostensibly, unless you get it wrong.
I've already rolled one. Do you want to do this one, B?
Unless someone else wants to.
I can split with you, B.
Hell yeah, thank you. Okay, I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want this to be all my ass. Okay. You ready?
Ready.
Let's do it. All right. I got a 4.
I got a 1.
It's a 6.
Nope. A 4, a 1 is a 5, and then plus 2 is a 7.
7.
Yay, so I can't math.
Hey, none of us can. It's right. It will be, pursuing the opportunity will be more dangerous, which, you know, I'm not going to introduce an unwelcome complication. I'm just going to say that this is going to be a dangerous fucking thing to do, which I think makes perfect sense. So this is actually fun because you know that Hank is up in a tower somewhere and you are in the lowest part of the fortress. So that said, down in the Undercroft, what are your next moves? What are you trying to do here?
Okay. I hate that I have to say this, but we gotta split up.
Are you fucking with me?
It's a big fortress, and we're gonna have to cover a lot of ground, okay?
I guess it would make us harder to notice if we were split up.
Mm-hmm.
But I am not keen on leaving people, at least in groups of two. No one needs to be by themselves here.
I won't be by myself. Chief Roseki's got me.
Oh, I forgot.
And then you, Greeley, and Ellis go find Hank.
Okay. Wait, what are you gonna... Okay, if we're finding Hank, what are you doing?
Gonna go talk to the manager?
Oh, no, 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 no. You are not... Are you at... You're not going to do that by yourself with this...
I'm not by myself. I have Chief Roseki.
Cool. I don't give a shit. You're essentially by yourself.
Look.
Maybe find Mike.
It can be either way. It could be... that Hank is with Mike and they're... all gathered together in this big, fantastic, spectacularly awful pit where they, you know, are all in prison together. Or Mike is special. Mike has a special connection to this place. And in my hypothesis, I'm thinking that this Karnanos figure might want Mike. And so if I find Karnanos, I find Mike.
Okay.
And then so you have Hank, and we meet together here and leave.
Okay, that's cool. I love your enthusiasm. What are you going to do when you go talk to this antler fella, this Karnonos person? What are you going to do? If they're anything like these hunters, you're just going to walk up. You guys going to have a friendly chat? Is that what's going to happen?
I'm going to use one of my state-of-the-art everything to pull out enhanced team optics, thermal goggles with infrared settings, keeper reveals two relevant clues at night or in low-light conditions. This is not for clues. This is just as, like... I
like it.
Like, you just... I just touch my glasses, and you see, like, this infrared kind of, like, filter fit over them. Roseki pulls down thermal goggles, and then I pull back the crossbow with a bolt in it. I say, I'm going to go shoot that antlered motherfucker with a crossbow bolt, and if he gets back up, I'll shoot him again.
Just so it's not like a waste of your move, I'm going to just say right now, since there's no more clues to be found, instead of, you know, it just being you get two clues in dark while you're in low, no light conditions, you have 2 points you can use to manipulate rolls.
Perfect. Good point. I love it.
Oh, sick. Mm-hmm. That is how do that.
Hey, Dallas, you want Greeley to go with you? He knows his way around in these parts. Because sometimes Greeley, when you got to go up, Greeley. You got to go down and sideways.
Would you feel comfortable with that, Greeley?
Greeley, Greeley.
I got to bring you around the office. They'd love you.
Greeley.
Agreed.
Yeah, he's a pretty good warrior.
He spins a bow staff.
Sick. God, I do love this little guy. He's pretty cool.
Reminds me of Keelik. All right, yeah, Greeley, you're with us.
Greeley.
I get Greeley's shoulders up and I look down and I say it was nice knowing you, Greeley. You stay true to your people, okay?
Greeley like nods, his large wet eyes looking into yours. He holds up his hands and tilts his head back.
Oh.
Expecting you to do the same.
See, little guy.
And he flicks out his tongue and it smacks against your forehead. He looks at you and he goes,
Outless.
And just gives you a sage nod.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, amazing.
And we break. You guys go, splitting up. Mike. The figure standing before you on this island of rock amidst the mist and shadow is ostensibly a man of average height and build in a gold suit, wearing a sun-shaped mask with depictions of celestial bodies that slightly glow. And his hands are clasped behind his back. As he just looks at you and says,
I have to admit, that was an incredibly stupid move, Mr. Whately. But I admire your tenacity. Are you feeling well?
As well as I can be, given the circumstances. Who might you be?
A friend, Mr. Whately. I do not often divert my attention from the garden, but I must obey the bearer of my mask. I am almost surprised Antonia returned it to me in exchange for helping you. You must be special. You are special. You will be special. Must be, are, will be. Ripples and eddies. Do you understand me, Mr. Whately?
Yes.
He takes a step, begins to pace around you. As just very slightly, he looks out at the fringes of the void surrounding you, continues to speak.
You have long since been haunted by what you do not understand and what you fear you are becoming, yes?
Yes.
You need not worry, Michael Whately. You are not entirely doomed, not yet destined to fall to the same fate as those who have come before you. There are worlds where you are fallen, where you will fall, worlds where you never will fall, worlds where you've never been, but all the same, there is potential. Your fate is not yet truly decided in your world. Mr. Whately. It all began with the stairs. They haunted you. You were frightened of the stairs, Michael. You saw them as an omen, a portent of doom, death, harrowing your footsteps. You cannot be blamed for this misinterpretation, Mr. Whately. You did not understand their full context. It would be impossible for you to. It is already beyond your understanding. The stairs are a key, Michael. You are the stairs. You are the key. In my time before I reached the garden, I was a lock. I wandered the earthly realms in search of my key, though I did not know I was looking for it, nor that at that point I was a lock. Now I am the lock, the key, and the gate. I can help you. Not entirely of my own choice, but I wish to help you all the same. I offer you a choice. Two choices, the same end. I will help you and your friends in this drastic effort you have taken. I will provide an assistance to aid you in your quest to rescue your friend Hank McBride and return to the material plane which you call your existence. In exchange, you must make a choice.
He holds out his left hand, just palm upward. There's nothing in it. Just holds out his hand. He says,
"You will be a vessel for great power, my power. I lend it to you, but you are imperfect, Michael. It will destroy you. You will have the power to help, immensely so, but you will not survive. You will not return to your world. It will destroy you. It is more than oblivion, Michael. It is a complete undoing of your very existence. I wish I could tell you it would be painless. But you will save everyone."
He holds out his second hand.
"The second choice will still grant you power at a cost, but it provides the chance of success at the expense of your identity. You will have the ability, empowered to aid people, but in using it, you and the others will slowly begin to forget your connection to the Whateleys. If you survive, you stand a chance of being able to live a normal life on your world, as far as normal goes."
As the keeper, I'll tell you this. The first choice, you mark the mountain. You are going to take advantage on every single roll you make and can provide help with for the rest of the scenario, as you become a vessel for great power. The second choice allows you to unmark Crowns of the Mountain to take advantage on rolls or to nudge them up a tier. But when you do so, you must explain how aspects of the Whateleys vanish from you as you begin to forget your connection to them, and you will just become Michael Hesters at the end of it. One is to embrace your identity and face destruction. The other is to dissolve it and possibly stand a chance at living a peaceful, normal life. Which do you choose, Michael Whateley?
People keep calling him that. But it's always been Whateley Hesters. No. It's been Hesters Whateley. Mike always has been more of a Hesters. The last couple years, this Whateley identity got thrusted upon him. It was not by his own choosing. And every horrendous and horrible thing that has happened to him is because of that name, Whateley. That family shouldn't exist in the world. But the people with that name, they have a right to become something else. And so Mike will choose the other hand. He will become Hester's once more.
Good. You take the hand. There is a flash of bright light. and back to the others. So just remind me, we have Dallas and Greeley and Rozeki going to face down Karnonos. Ellis and Roderick are together or split up?
Together.
Gotcha. And where are you two going again?
To Hank.
Gotcha. How are you going there? We actually let me first say this. Because we cut between both groups.
Mm-hmm.
Navigating the labyrinthian inner halls of the Fortress of Verdigris. Many chambers, many stairs, many passages, shadows on distant walls. This place is full of dangers. But what about the architecture makes you feel that even the fortress itself in some way is hunting you?
I feel that there are there's eyes watching us, embedded in the stone, in the flashes of light. It's almost like the glint off of a predator's eyes in the dark.
Doors are shutting, and they're getting closer to us as they're kind of like locking in on where we are.
There are bronze flowers that might look like sconces, but as they open, the petals open up. They drop fruit that bears bronze caltrops on the ground.
It's all just a little bit familiar. And that's the danger, because if it all looks alike, how can you tell what if you're going forward at all?
I'm going to ask for the dangerous move for each group. Dallas, obviously you're going to make that role. Ellis or Roderick. I mean, it sounds like Ellis would be the one leading, so I would say that it's probably should be an Ellis role. Unless you want to roll B, I don't care either way. I'm going to say that this is navigating this place will require sensitivity. Just because of this place is weird, does not adhere to physics and reality. Dallas, at least on your end to navigate to where you can find Karnonos, what are you afraid of happening?
Oh, baby. I'm afraid we're going to walk through a door and end up upside down and just keep falling and don't stop until something stops us.
It's worse than that. Nothing's going to stop you. You just fall into utter oblivion and reduced to component atoms in the entropy of the dimensions of complete existence. You know? And because you're an agent of Prism, I give you disadvantage. You are the most interloper of interlopers.
Yeah.
I'll let you think on if you're going to do anything with that. And then on the other side, whoever is rolling this, is it going to be Roderick or Ellis?
Whichever you think is more appropriate, honestly.
I'd say having Roderick roll it because even though Ellis knows the space well, I'm going to paint this from the stance of, you're the outsider here in a weird place, okay. So you're the most affected. So even if it's Ellis leading you through the tower, this is more of just like, you're the one at most at risk here. So what are you afraid of happening here?
I'm afraid we're going to open a door and just absolutely get murked before we can find Hank.
Oh, yeah, it's worse than that. You're going to... you're going to be just like, fully, it's like, you know, Han Solo walking into the room full of stormtroopers, you know, it's like, you're going to just fully enter into a part of the castle that is teeming with others. And cool. Yeah, it's real bad. Each of you may roll plus sensitivity.
All right.
Dallas, did you modify your roll in any way?
Yeah, I'm going to have Chief Rozeki kind of help keep me, kind of keep my head on a swivel, you know.
Once per session advantage?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. To cancel out that disadvantage. So it's just a straight roll. And you said with sensitivity?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
My ass got a
Fucking
It's
incredible.
actually 14 with my sensitivity.
I got a 14 too!
Yeah! We're fucking good at this.
Holy shit.
Let's go, Greeley.
Woo!
Okay. Woo! Let me think of advantages to give you guys for a second. At least for the Roderick and Ellis side, I think your advantage is just going to be like fast and like you just like you guys can paint me the montage of like your, you know, Mission Impossible movement through the tower to find Hank. You can narrate this whole fucking epic sequence of the two of you moving through there. I think your extra advantage is just going to be that you just get, you know, I'm just by the, you're just getting there, no problem. Like, right, like you're gonna get there. You'll by the end of it, you'll be right where you, like Hank is. That's your extra advantage. Like, no other peril. Like, you can just have your little montage, and bam, you're there. You do it. For Dallas, for your 14, I'll take a look at your sheet real quick. For your advantage, I'm going to say that you can unmark two personal items of your wish, of your choice from your list, that will be available for a possible advantage in your upcoming ordeals. Those are great. Let's start with Roderick and Ellis narrating your little, you know, sneaking through the fortress, getting to your destination, little montage, however you want to spend that.
I actually like Ellis to go first, since Ellis, I assume, is presumably leading, because Roderick has no idea where the fuck they are.
Ellis stops Roderick and says, "Listen," and we hear like the marching of like metal boots on stone, and we're hiding behind a column, and just like Alex's Star Wars reference, we see like a giant murder squad of these others marching with haste to a different part of the fortress. And after they leave, I'm like, I hope they're going for Dallas.
Oh,
but
shit.
The good news is they're not going for us. And so he turns and he's running upstairs and
gotta go fast. Gotta go fast.
And they're the scurrying. There's so much scurrying. There's zipping behind walls, hiding behind really strange statues that seem to be a little alive to keep away from these hunters and wood devils and God knows what else, miraculously avoiding doors that fall into the abyss instead of where we want to go. I think there's a lot of near misses, and miraculously, we don't actually die. We don't even get confronted.
Alex, you're muted.
Yeah.
I say incredible. And
oh, there you go.
Slight correction to Mike's ability. I posted in this chat, but just vocalizing this. I'm only unmarking for advantage, not to bump up results. You know,
yeah.
Like, so you can still, it's in order to bump up results, you still have to put on crown. So you have the ability to like unmark them, you know, but like if you mark the mountain, you're done. You know, it's you can still possibly die. All right. As for Dallas and Roseki and Greeley, narrate, if you would be so kind, how you essentially storm the throne room and how you get inside and like you set the scene and all of that. It's like, give us the whole deets.
I think we're seeing like a, it's not quite Splinter Cell because Dallas is there, but like you see Roseki and like Greeley is like kind of leading along, scurrying along, hopping to and from. Roseki is like all tacticaled out. And then you see Dallas dressed like a fucking ranger like this, covered in like goop and dirt and shit, and just like looks dirty wearing that Stetson hat and these expensive clothes, has a crossbow and these weird fucking light up glasses, just this weird like amalgamation. It's when you see your custom character in a cutscene, like very much. But like we'll see Greeley like when, as there's like these hunters or like these guards, these wood devils like walking by, Greeley will like stick out a bow staff, one will trip Roseki, will shoot it in the head, and then the other one will turn. We see like Roseki like take a taser, stick it into the neck, and then Greenlee sweeps its legs and just jams the bow staff in its head, squishing it like a bug. And then just Dallas just going up and then double tapping some that are still moving with the crossbow bolt, and then going, oh, and then slowly putting their foot on its head and pulling the bolt out. It is not graceful at all. And it's just like a, oh, okay, I'm sorry. Oh, all right. But eventually they make it to these big bronze tall doors that go up probably even more than like the ceiling, as there's like this kind of swirling around the ceiling. Rezeki is next to it, like in a stack, ready to like breach and clear the room. Greeley is like on the wall, ready to hop in. And Dallas just walks up and says, "None of that shit, please." And just pushes the double doors open and
full
goes,
Aragorn, full Aragorn.
Yeah, just full Aragorn, just pushes the doors open.
They go ahead, go, please.
And just starts monologuing, goes, "I have to admit, you've got an impressive place in here, a fortress, guarded by immense, nobody knows how many number of guards, twisting passages, breaking space and time, but you still were no match for Dallas Bart Moss." And then finally takes stock of what's in the room.
Yeah, in the room, which as you like look up, it's, there are dozens of others in here, hunters, soldiers, creatures that you have not even yet seen, just all assembled in the court of their king. Carnonos, seated against his throne, stands at your intrusion. You can see there's like a blackened, oily, like scorch mark in the middle of the floor, like something exploded there. But Carnonos stands. And just the voice echoes across the chamber.
"Who do you think you are?"
"Dallas Bart Moss. Bart Moss Solutions. And also more importantly, I'm an agent of Prism. And this is a DeGoya class. This is a DeGoya class incursion that is happening, and you are all under arrest. So right now I'm going to need you to put your hands up, down on your knees, face towards the wall. Me, my associates Greeley and Chief Rezeki will go ahead, take all your weapons, and we will take your statements eventually one by one."
"Your petty mortal authority has no hold over me. I am Carnonos. You stand before the will of my hunters."
Just gonna shoot him with a crossbow bolt.
Bolt flies through the air and slams into it. He looks down at it as like annoyed, and green energy begins to crackle across his arms. At that moment, from the middle of the room, there's a bright flash of light, like sunlight. And standing in the middle of the room right now is Mike. How does Mike look at the moment?
Mike is not in his normal forest ranger outfit, but rather in sort of golden pajamas. Like, he's not sure, like, where he picked this up, so, like, he's equally as surprised as, like, suddenly being in the room again. But he's just like, am I right on time? Maybe?
Waitly.
Incorrect. Not that anymore.
Go ahead.
Dallas, I think we should leave now. I have an idea of where Hank is, and we shall be off. You?
All the hunters are start attacking. They
I just start running towards Dallas and just going to try to grab him by like the cuff of the neck and just drag him out.
Yeah, it's okay, so I'm gonna need you to make the dangerous move, Mike, just straight up, because this is a room full of others and the king himself. Escape? Not quite impossible, but extremely unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you afraid of happening here?
That I'm not going to be able to save Dallas because, like, Dallas is like outnumbered and doesn't have powers like I do.
Worse than that, you're all gonna die. You're
Oh,
all gonna get
God.
overwhelmed. Even your powers aren't gonna be enough with this overwhelming force.
Okay.
You're gonna make this roll. I wanna say, on the one hand, vitality does make sense, but so does composure. I'm gonna say vitality because mostly you're just trying to like outrun, like be quick. I'm gonna tell you this right now. I'll tell you this right now. If you mark advantage because of by spending one of the crowns of the forest, something interesting will also happen
Okay,
to help cover you.
I was planning on doing that
Oh,
anyways,
good.
so I'm gonna unmark the Peaks of Truth. Question mechanically, does that clear
Yes,
Obsessed
it
with the
does.
Mountain?
Yes, it does.
Hoo-hoo-hoo.
So we'll go ahead and roll with advantage plus vitality to escape the throne room and lead everyone away.
First time in several sessions, I am conditionalist. That is a 10.
A 10. Very good. Very good. You will do it. I'll let you narrate that in just a moment, but first allow me to exert my will of this is my fan service campaign, and I will find every avenue to keep inserting fan service into it. We cut back to when you were speaking with a man in the sun mask, as he was like explaining your choice to you about the power, like what you could do. And he's and for the Peaks of Truth, he explained to you,
You have long sought the truth, Michael, to a detriment. But sometimes there is companionship in those who hunt for the truth, even if they know it might destroy them. I might be able.
No, he wouldn't say might be able to. No, he wouldn't say. He says,
a part of this power, I will lend you the services of one who is sworn to me, one who I have helped before.
And first of all, I need you to tell me, because you marked it, what stuff is Michael forgetting as he's unleashing this power?
I think it's not just forgetting, it is the erasing of evidence. All those holes in Michael's yard, the dirt starts to bubble and groan as they get filled up, and Michael forgets about doing all this sort of obsession, this sort of like downward spiral into madness, as right now, before Dallas is a very confident Michael Hesters, as he's quite literally running away, but like we're not going to be fighting gods here. Not today.
No.
Not like this.
But your new associate has sent somebody to help cover your escape. And we hear in his voice say,
You are not a hunter, Michael. So I will send you a hunter to hunt your hunters.
And as you're escaping, in that same glowing sunlight that you appeared from, another figure stepped through, one you've never seen before, and looks like he just stepped out of a fucking cowboy movie. He is a very large, jacked man with thick mutton chops, a little bowler hat, bolo tie, and a pocket, like square of
No,
purple silk.
no.
Hey Wes, could you please tell me what Grapplin Ross Fontenot, the American, has to say in this situation?
Jesus fucking Christ.
This is for anyone watching, this is Wes's American from our Between campaign, who swore him basically sought the man in the sun mask
Oh
a peaceful
shit.
out.
Yeah.
You had intended to take him up on his offer to take you away from this world. And
Oh,
while we never finished that
goodness.
campaign, like the lingering what if there, it's an interesting choice, so we're rolling with it.
It is. Okay.
I thought about doing the voice myself, but I'm like, nah, Wes, I'll let you take the stage light for a moment because this is your character. to just say something in the scene.
Yeah, Grappling Ross Fontenot, this gigantic Cajun looking man wearing a bowler cap, chewing on a backwoods cigar, steps out and starts counting shells into the chamber of his Colt revolver, his Colt Navy revolver, and then pulls the hammer back and goes, "You got about 10 minutes. Tea time's coming up soon. And, well, apparently there's a new pastry chef." And then just starts striding, brings the gun up, and starts firing. Just fanning the hammer. Yeah.
Fucking incredible. And you guys, go ahead, Chaotic, narrate your escape from the scene as you're from your 10 plus and what happens next.
Are you all right? I've been through a lot today.
Yeah, why are you talking like that?
I don't know. I think I may have met God.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah, this is... We're getting out of here?
Yes.
Okay, we're getting the fuck out of here. Okay, great. We gotta meet the others. We gotta go get Hank. We gotta meet the others. Just stat... Greeley, you okay?
Greeley.
Perfect.
Okay, well, I know the shortcut. The stairs, no longer a problem. I think we turn around the corner and there's some stairs.
Incredible. Love that. All right.
And Dallas you guys, is like, okay, yeah.
You guys, peel the fuck out of there. Meanwhile, before they will rejoin you, Roderick and Ellis have ascended the tower to where Hank is. I want you guys to kind of, this is less of a paint the scene in the traditional sense and more of just like collectively we're all just going to describe the space itself. Because as this is a location y'all invented, I just want each of you to establish some details about what this place looks like. So whoever wishes to go, please do.
The sconces on the walls, when they go up, they're made out of some kind of metal, wrought metal. But at the tops, they're crowns, and we see green flames like flickering through the crowns, much like the woman that Dallas saw.
I think the ground here is cold, polished bronze, and it gives the place an appearance of being much larger than it is, and it's a little disorienting to walk on.
It's cold.
The echoes in the room have echoes themselves. And even though it kind of feels like it's an enclosed room, it sounds cavernous.
There is a cell where Hank McBride is sitting inside. I think we need a scene between Roderick and Hank just for like a little bit, because Ellis can kind of step at the back just because I don't want to make Daniel jump between them so easily. If you just guys want to have a... So what does Roderick do when he sees Hank in his cell?
He has this plan of he's going to be very professional about this and he's going to be, all right, in and out, no problem. He's got this. And all of that leaves his brain as soon as he sees Hank alive. And he rushes up to the cell and can't think of a single thing to say. But Hank, I do want to let you know that this is the first time you've seen Roderick since the incident. He has been royally fucked. He looks rough right now like everyone else does. They all are dirty and tired and probably covered in a little bit of swamp mud. But the entire, like a whole half of his body has just been burnt. Just, it was down to the bone, but he runs up to the, are there bars? What is this cell look like?
I think it's like this like weird, like lattice work cage of strange metal. Yeah.
Yeah, he runs up to that and immediately like starts like trying to shake for a door, and he looks to Hank and he's like, "Holy shit, you're really here."
Hank looks up and he's like, he looks to the voice and he's like, "Roderick, is this Costa Rica? Where are we?"
It ain't Costa Rica, my man. It's God, I wish it was. Do you know where you are? Do you at all?
No, I have no idea how long I've even been here. I was just driving a truck. And then I ended up in some Costa Rican prison. They don't
No.
even have a toilet. It's weird.
You do know this. Okay, you don't know. Oh my, holy shit. So like there's been no sort of otherworldly sort of predator looking guys or no like big antler guy.
No, there was a guy singing down in the sewers. That's it.
I mean, that
Roderick,
might
you
have.
hear a voice behind you that says, "I keep his mind safe."
And he whips around.
Floating against the back of the chamber in like a strange alcove is the woman in the white gown with the circlet of green flame around her brow, featureless face, just floating there, just ethereally, as if she were underwater. She has no face, but you know she's looking right at you.
Roderick glances to Ellis and is like, "Is this a friend of yours?"
This is one of them. This is Greeley. Greeley used to. This Greeley likes this one.
Okay, friend of Greeley's is a friend of mine. So you, what, make him think he's in Costa Rica or some shit?
I make him perceive the bare minimum. I give him the mind of something small and easy to forget. I allow him to not be burdened by the weight of this place.
That's it's real nice of you, I guess. So can we just get out of here? You coming with us? What's the
As you're saying this, there is a lot of noise as the rest of the gang makes it up here as well and comes barreling in through the door.
Before we can see who they are, Roderick has like, because I still have a gun in my inventory, he whips again to the sound and he's got a gun drawn and he's like, "Holy fuck! You guys are loud as shit. What are you, Mike? Oh shit! Oh Mike! Mike, okay, you're
Hi.
hi. Why are you in pajamas?"
I may have met God, and I don't know what his fashion choices are.
Okay.
Things are gonna get better for me. I think. My mind might become more Swiss cheese, like briefly, but then it'll fix itself. God promised me that.
Okay. I won't. You know what? Cool. I am glad you met God. I just met a lady who is friends with our frog friend and I guess makes Hank thinks he think he's in Costa Rica. So what the fuck? Dallas, do you survive this whole thing? I'm kind of impressed.
We did fine. There's kind of like a there's a big Cajun man back behind us, and he's I think he turned into an alligator at one point when I was getting dragged away by Mike. I don't know. I think we need to leave. Oh, Ellis, good to see you.
Let's roll.
And
Hank?
yeah, he thinks he's in Costa Rican jail. Don't worry about it.
Hank, we're breaking you out of Costa Rica jail.
I would just again like to take this opportunity, Mr. Dallas Bartmark, to thank you for all that you've done for the White Mountain National Forest.
I'm so happy, and just to make sure that we have a deeper connection on a more personal level, we're gonna get. I've got a go fast boat for us. We're gonna have mojitos. It's gonna be like a Miami Vice. It'll be fantastic.
Absolute.
You cannot leave that easy.
Oh.
Says who?
Says
you?
The laws of this realm.
Okay. Then how do we leave, ma'am?
The ghostly figure looks at Hank in his cell and says,
"The claim on him is held tight. One cannot easily remove this prisoner. However, there must be a prisoner. There must be one who occupies this cell. Its old inhabitant took him for part of this purpose. You know of whom I speak. You will not be able to make it out alive unless you return him to his prison with me, where his power is dim."
And this is the final complication for the mystery. Karnonos must be imprisoned in this tower once more, sealed, since he is in part of his plans over however knows who, how long, escaped, built his power, has been working, whatever cosmic forces are at play. You don't fucking know the context here, but if that's all it takes to get out of here, so be it. This is going to be a dangerous move from every single person here. Every single person here. And it will share a collective. It's worse than that. Because if you fail in your part of whatever you do here, you're not making it out of here. You die. That's whatever that looks like. We'll talk about it then. As for the individual little things of what you might be like, you know, afraid of, sure, you can each contextualize those. But the broad, we're all sharing the, like, you're not making it out of here. So going in character keeper order, I'd like you to tell me how you plan to contribute to this final leg of the rescue. And then we will each roll and build those pools from there. So starting with Roderick, what is Roderick's contribution to the final leg of the rescue with somehow seeing Karnonos trapped in Hank's cage?
I think Roderick's first inclination is to try to lure Karnon, like to guide him a certain way, like to give chase, to give something chase. That's sort of what he volunteers to do, unless someone, because he's got like a gun and tear gas canisters and a lot of sort of loud things that he's yeah, that's his idea.
Gotcha. What is Mike planning to do?
Mike has unusual powers. He will assure the path because, like, this place shifts and changes, and I shall provide consistency.
What does Dallas do?
Dallas is going to, if there's no camera for, but Mike is here and wearing golden pajamas, Dallas is going to try to use the Odyssey lens to hone Mike a little bit. Is maybe just going to start looking at the different inscriptions and moving the lens around.
What does Ellis do?
In his armor and with his spear, I think he's going to duel Karnonos, but it's all like he's just going to keep retreating back up to the cage.
Roderick and Ellis, you'll roll plus vitality. Mike and Dallas plus sensitivity. Roderick, what are you afraid of happening here? Just on the base level.
on a base level, I'm afraid of it not working. I'm afraid of Carnotaurus outsmarting us, and all of this is for nothing.
Roll. Mike, what are you afraid of on the base level?
I'm afraid of losing myself.
Roll. Because... Dallas, what are you afraid of happening?
I'm afraid of walking away empty-handed.
Roll. And Ellis, what are you afraid of on the base level?
I'm afraid that I'm not trained enough to fight Carnotaurus, and he'll just skewer me.
I'm marking the ancient cliff
for advantage. For advantage. Gotcha.
And I'm going to use the armor for advantage.
Very good.
I use the Odyssey lens for advantage.
I don't know. Could I use like one of my items for advantage? Is that like I mentioned, or is that out of the question?
No,
here?
You can absolutely. You already rolled? So I mean, you rolled two dice.
I rolled two dice.
Well, if you just forgot about, you can use items. Yeah, I'll be nice. What do you want? What are you using?
My gun.
Yeah. So okay, roll an extra die, and that will just count that as advantage. I'll be nice.
Okay.
What's your total?
That didn't help. I got out of five.
You got a five.
With my vitality.
Okay. I'll adjudicate these responses in a moment. Let me take note of this real quick.
Yeah.
Mike, what you get?
A 10. Mike is doing well. I don't know what's going on.
Dallas, what did you get?
An 11, and I fully plan to put on a crown. I'm just going to let you know.
Gotcha. And what did Ellis get?
I got, with an advantage, I got 11, and plus 2 is 13.
Okay. Very good. Ellis, for your advantage, when we factor this into your narration, you'll be able. I'm gonna give you the choice. I figure you'll take it, but I always figure I'd, you know, present the choice. This advantage, you could use it to mitigate. Because Rod, you got a 5, right? Yeah, you can use your advantage to save Roderick's life. And, you know, you can use that advantage to cover it. It'll basically free bump it up a tier. So he's not going to, because otherwise Roderick is dying, you know, unless he puts on a mask or puts on a crown. Roderick is out. Like, he gets killed during this whole thing. So you can use your advantage if you want to save his life as part of your maneuvering in fighting Carnotaurus. Alternatively, you can, if Roderick would rather use a crown to bump that up, you can.
I have 3 crowns, so I could bump it up.
I'll leave the choice up to you if you want to use your advantage to help him, or will use an advantage for something else.
That is your choice.
Up to you, Daniel.
How's it up to me?
I'm saying, like, you can either spend your advantage to help save Michael, or save Roderick, or Roderick will use one of his crowns to save himself, and you can just use that advantage in some other way.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
Okay, cool. Then we'll get back to that. Okay, first off, Roderick, you hear bang, bang, bang sounds of furious movement. And as you had descended the tower, you see a haggard Carnotaurus lumbering through the facility, bloodied, not necessarily with his blood, just wounded. Lumbering, wielding the gnarliest weapon, a long pole arm spearhead, like for gutting a boar, you know, just holding that, lumbering down the hallway, staring you down, and you open fire, but God, it's not enough. We just see the Carnotaurus descends on you and rips your belly open, spears you through, and mounts your torso atop his antlers up above, letting your fresh blood and entrails drip down against his white mask as he relishes in the hunt.
I'm gonna put on a crown.
Which crown?
I do have a question about, like, if I marked peaks of truth obsessed with the mountain, is that anything anymore?
Not
while
really.
We're here?
So you might as well just do the Crown of the Forest, so you get to do the last, last little bit of lore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. You want to narrate that right now?
Yeah, I think actually this is the last thing Roderick thinks about before he is gutted and mounted on the antlers of Carnonos. Narrate a scene a few weeks ago showing a private side of you the rest of the team never gets to see. And he's got a hobby, and it's knitting. He knits. He doesn't do it at work. He doesn't do it anywhere else because he's usually busy. But he knits, and he was knitting all of his sort of his crew scarves. It's for the next holiday, and it's even Mike, even Dallas, regardless of whatever had been going on with them, he knitted them that, and he actually started one for Ellis. He didn't know if Ellis would take it, but he would. And there's one that is finished that he never got to give Hank, because it was a Christmas present. And we see him putting that in a box with the at the bottom under the rest of the knitting stuff. And just sitting there for a while, looking at the rest of them. And he gets back to what he was doing.
Instead, what we see happen, that reality we saw in the reflection of the metallic halls of you getting gutted, but in the present moment, you're reflecting back on your training, guiding him, drawing him, baiting him to fall into the trap with Ellis. Your complication from bumping that up, not that, you know, conditions less so matter because this is really the final role of the game, but this will kind of like narratively color things for you. I'm going to say he's going to give you some sustaining injury, like something he gets to something on you that, like, whether it's going to leave like a permanent mark. So I'll let you decide if that's going to be like a limb or like an eye. I don't know. I'll let you decide. You can let us know here in a moment. But as part of that fight, you get a nasty wound. Ellis is there for the next part of the plan, armored up, ready to fight him down and have a fighting retreat up into the tower. Ellis, you got a 13. So just narrate this showdown with Carnonos. You, the survivor, your captor, the oppressor of this realm. Narrate the sequence.
He looks like he's really getting beat, and he's taking some hits, and the armor like flashes whenever he gets hit by this big weapon of the strange metal. And he's always like going up, and he looks like he's tripping and he's falling and he's scrambling, but it's all like a feint. Like he's just trying to lure the guy in, because he studied the way these hunters are like malicious and they're sadistic. And so he knows that this is getting Carnonos like excited. And so he just keeps up the act as he gets closer and closer to the cage, deflecting, but then like, you know, like it screaming out in pain when he's not really hurt.
And all the while, Carnonos is bearing down on you, yelling,
"I'm so you return to me, survivor. You eluded my hunt for long enough, and finally I will see you mounted. You have proven a worthy prey."
And your advantage will come into play here in a moment. Before they ascend to the tower, Dallas, with your 12, narrate your whole thing of how you supposedly empower Mike using the Odyssey lens. Yeah, you have full narrative control here, and this is a 12 plus, so just fucking go ham.
There's like this moment of like just like running behind, and Dallas, like Rozeki's actually helping out, Greeley's helping out, and Dallas is just running with like this crossbow and just goes, "Fuck it," and just like tosses the crossbow to the side, and it's just running, and it like feels just like jangling in their pocket, and then like is like still running, but like slows down a little bit, pulls it out and sees the Odyssey lens, and then looks at Mike in all of his like wonder and everything with these golden pajamas and everything. And like runs a little bit faster. It's like, "Mike, Mike! Mike! And it holds out the Odyssey lens. Eat it or something. I don't know. Is it what did you do with the camera?
What camera? And that is what Mike forgets next.
From the Ancient Cliffs, nice.
Shit. Just look through this. Just look through this. And I'm just going to put it into Mike's hands and be like, there, take it. And just like running trips a little bit, catches themselves. And he's like, you got this! Running.
Mike. You get to close us off with your 10. Mm-hmm. Narrate the final showdown, how everything comes together, and what happens to seal Karnonos and rescue Hank.
I think it just as Mike is handed the Odyssey lens itself that turns on, and Mike is just running with it, unsure exactly what this thing is, but still holds it. I think as Karnonos comes into the frame of the Odyssey lens, it just starts to crack and break as before. But the power that is released is sort of leached into Mike as, like, the hallways, instead of it being, like, having multiple paths to twist off, each one is sealed shut by another as it funnels Karnonos into his cage. And instead of, like, I think as Karnonos is entering the cage itself, shifts instead of these, like, paltry wooden beams, it turns into iron bars forming, trying to like restrain Karnonos in chains and whatnot, just keeping him trapped in there forever. So what has happened since he got out never will happen again.
Or at least not for a while.
Yeah.
As the screams of Karnonos echo out across the mountains of Verdigris, we cut to black. We're approaching time, so we're going to run over a little bit. We're going to take a 5-minute break. During that time, I'd like you all to think about the epilogues for your characters. We'll each get to have a narrated epilogue, and then we will do, in lieu of Stars and Wishes, we will have just a kind of like post-campaign, talk about this whole game and all the things we loved about and everything. We'll, you know, Stars obviously for this session, but yeah, just the whole thing. We're going to have a little chat. So I will see you all after the break. In the time after you have resolved the mountain rescue, weeks, months, even years, we're going to do character epilogues for whatever you want to establish with your character at the end, whatever note you want to end on. We're going to do this in any order. So whoever would like to do their epilogue first, you are welcome to start.
I know mine pretty good. I get two. So the first one, we just see Hank on the beach in Pensacola, Florida. We see Wendy with him, but we don't know if she's visiting or if she if they got back together. We don't know. But we do see her on the beach with him. And then we see Ellis and Greeley and what was the big guy's name from the village?
Kenton. It was actually Kenton, it was super funny. I was gonna say that your extra advantage I was thinking about was giving you Ellis the ability to safely transit between worlds with no disorientation, really.
So we see Kenton and Greeley and Ellis walking along a river. We don't know where the river is. It doesn't seem like it's a river on Earth or on in the mountains of Verdigris. And Kenton and Ellis are having a conversation about the Rolling Stones. And Ellis is saying, sympathy for the devil. He is the devil. And Kenton is like, my interpretation is that And Greeley's just listening to him talk about the Rolling Stones as they walk down this odd river.
We see Mike Hester's back at home. It's a little home. It's been cleaned up. Everything seems to be in its proper place, as we saw from very, very early on in the campaign, as though he has gotten none of the like this adventure whatsoever. And he's making phone calls to people because, like, he's gotten several from people he has known, people he doesn't know, but they know his family, and just say, "Oh, what? Where have you been? Where have you disappeared off to?" And Mike is just giving like vague answers, saying, "No, no, I'm all right. I think I was probably had a little bit of an emotional downward spiral for a few months, but like my friends at the White Mountain Rescue Services really came in here clutch to help clean things up and make sure like I got back on my feet. I think I was just having a bit of a midlife crisis about what I wanted to do. And frankly, here where I'm at, I really am where I need to be, but I'll come and visit. Like, I think just being out in the woods by myself is something I do not need to be doing. I need people in my life. And it's all right. And if Alex allows me, I think my epilogue needs to contain a bit of some prison reports. Because I think we see that lady again, head of PRISM, going over Mike Hester's files. Instead of there being like blackout to like hide away confidential data, is a golden Sharpie over several names. Anywhere Waitley has been mentioned at all has been crossed out. Anything supernatural happening with Mike Hester's has been crossed out. And it goes across like several files that they have like on Roderick, anything concerning Mike has been crossed out. Anything that Dallas has done has been crossed out with in regards to Mike. As though Mike himself was a perfectly normal man. But she can't help see the discrepancy, because she knows the one thing that has remained is that Mike Hester's for some reason stole a PRISM car because they were investigating him, and that does not make sense for a normal man to do that.
Oh my gosh. It's months, maybe a year or two later. Roderick has an eye patch, but he hasn't quit his job like he promised. He's still at the service station. He's feeding Hank Jr., who is doing well, and he's about to go teach. He's about to go teach a class on first aid in the wilderness. And after he's fed Hank Jr., and he passes by his desk with a postcard from Pensacola pinned to the backboard. And he realizes that he's actually happy where he is. He might go visit Hank in Pensacola, but he's not going anywhere. Someone has to do it. Someone has to stay here. And this is where he's supposed to be. He's not going to go out in the woods by himself, though. Not at all. He's taking Mike with him, if Mike doesn't quit. And he really hopes Dallas stays. And he might recruit a few other volunteers. That program seemed to work out really, really well. But he never does his paperwork. He completely stops doing paperwork. no matter how much David Embargo bothers him about it.
So I say to you, Bart Moss Data Solutions employees, this is not the end of a journey, but the beginning of a new one. That being said, all that are staying on with the company as we move into the public-private sector need to understand your identities will be changed. You will no longer be able to go back to the places you call home. You will have to live a life on the road, but you will be paid handsomely. You will have benefits. We're talking vision, dental. We're talking health insurance, life insurance. No down payments also. It's amazing what you can do when you work in the public-private sector. But you will have to cut off ties with your family unless they move with you. It is something that we all must do. That's why Bart Moss Data Solutions will no longer be called Bart Moss Data Solutions, but Bart Moss, a Prism brand. And those who are no longer wishing to stay with the company will be given a handsome severance package and will also have to go see your designated mind tenders. Now, the mind tenders that are in the office, you'll have to go see them when you pack up your things and leave. But you are allowed to leave. There were rumors that we were going to make you disappear. That is not true. There is a process you will have to follow. Thank you. Thank you. Where is the... And then hits and then goes, logs off from the call. The call to all the employees. And just leans back. Feels good.
I suppose it does. An interesting speech.
It's not like a speech. I was kind of just like talking to him, you know, my employees. I kind of just like, you know, I'm amongst them.
Dallas, everything you say is a prepared speech. You cannot convince me otherwise. I saw you reading flashcards before starting that phone call.
You are observant.
I wouldn't have made it this far if I wasn't.
Fair enough.
Well then. She sips from her tea. I'm very pleased that you have agreed to continue your work for Prism. Acknowledging this is an interesting step I did not anticipate, but I am by no means displeased by. You tell me, Dallas. What do you want in this relationship?
Well, Director, I have to be completely honest. Our original agreement was everything I've ever wanted. Be able to maintain my lifestyle and also, you know, carve out a slice of life here. I saw things. You see? I witnessed things. I was able to imagine all the good that could be done with what was just beyond our reach. I mean, that's why the Greeley-Rosecki well is going to be utilized as much as it can.
That name is still pending, and you know it.
I just thought it'd be a nice gesture. You know, I'm trying new things.
Indeed. So then, do you intend to stay in this area? Or do you wish to accept assignments in other locales for Prism?
Well, I was talking with Roberto, and Roberto has been out west for a long time. Wants to stretch his legs a little bit. And I said, well, you know, come on in. We can bring you more into the fold and everything. And I know Bart Moss being under your control as much as it is now means that whoever works for Bart Moss is going to have to go through a whole screening process, changing identities and everything. So I figured, why not start fresh? You know, make like, let's. I never got to travel as much. just volunteer work, but I think now I need to do something for me, you know? I've been doing so much good.
So is that a yes or is that a no?
I was kind of hoping I would figure out by the time I finished that.
You didn't know.
Yeah, so...
How about this? I present you with an option and you can ruminate on it for a while. She passes like a little like case file towards you and she says, there's a paranatural anomaly that might possibly unfold into an event in the very near future out in Hugo, Minnesota. We are putting boots on the ground and might be taking a look at investigating this further. Tell me, what do you know about Calamity Raccoon's Good Time Pizza Farm? And that is the end of our campaign of White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace, bringing our whole story to a close. Wow. Yeah, we're gonna do stars in just a little bit of campaign chatter. Whoever wants to kick things off, because I need a moment, because I'm just kind of like lost in everything of this from this entire experience. So yeah, just wow. Whoever wants to kick things off and just let's you know, keep things pretty simple just about this session first, and then we can move into like a little bit of chatter about the campaign as a whole.
Hank McBride, Pop. Dayman Mike Hester's, Pop. Special Agent Roderick Lopes, Pop. The Between Monsters business character, Grappling Ross Fontenot, Pop. All the way, Pop. I can't believe I forgot that, like, he could turn into an alligator at any point, so I had to throw it in later. I was like, this man can also turn into an alligator. That's why the Man in the Sun, it was a whole Egyptian thing. It's just a fucking, it was a Sun and Moon thing. I did a Moon Knight thing. It was bad, whatever. I loved it. But Pop, fucking Ellis being dressed like King Leonidas, and it's just like, Pop, weird shit. We got all like cosmic and eldritch, but also like multiversal. Pop. That's it. That's all. I'm good. This is dope. Oh, fucking teaser to fucking Pizza Time. Pop. Yeah. That's way better than Harry Styles being a comic book character that nobody knows showing up at the end of the movie. So Pop. Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah, the Pizza Time thing. Holy shit. All of your references, Alex, to all of these other worlds and other campaigns is just delicious, delicious, delicious. Everything in this entire thing was delicious. I really loved your Carnonos voice, Alex. I that laugh was, ooh. I love it. I love it. So good. I love your voice acting. Oh my god. This entire thing was so good. Dallas is everything. The whole way you did the prism thing, the way you wrapped up that story was so beautiful, so appropriate. I love the speeches, and the pushing the doors open like Aragorn to make a speech. That was my favorite. And also your other character, the Alligator Man. I love this. Oh my god. And Mike choosing to be Mike Hester's was so good. That was so fun. I think I met God was a very good way to explain this whole thing. It was absolutely just immaculate. And Daniel, both Hank and Ellis, just, oh my gosh. Well, A, you played two characters. That's always hard. And you did such a good job. I love Hank thinking he was in a Costa Rican prison. That was really good. I love Ellis's everything all the time. I love that his epilogue was discussing the Rolling Stones with Kenton, was it? Yes, and Greeley. Oh my god. I love that Hank got to go to Pensacola. This was all fabulous. This was fabulous. Stars to everybody for all your wild descriptions and for this beautiful, beautiful end to a campaign.
Yeah, I've got to echo a lot of the stars that being said, of just like the references, like everything being tied up very, very neatly. I'm so glad that Roderick is still a forest ranger after all of this. I'm I'm scared for the fate of the world, well, because Bart Moss is now a subject of Prism. Like, I don't know what they're going to be going on about. I don't know what Dallas's end goals are. Like, he's thinking big picture here, and I don't know what they're going to be doing next, and that scares me. God, I'm so glad that like with Hank, like even though stuff got resolved, like there's still like lingering questions about like his ex-wife, like how did things wrap up, like of like Hank McBride effectively coming back from the dead, like that's like could be its own like mini series on its own part. I like, and it's like Hester's like, I was so surprised like of being teleported to the fragrant void, but I'm very pleased about that. I believe it was Alex wrote down like the quote that you said, "Begone, dear Kalakas."
Vrykalakas, yeah, begone, Vrykalakas, scions of Proteus, yeah.
Yeah, like I'm just like, how on earth did you come up with that? Like on the spot, unless he wrote it down and were just reading my mind about like me doing
10 seconds
those.
of Googling while you were very quickly, while you were narrating your thing. I just looked up
Well,
Greek shapeshifters, like, and I just like, let's just go. I was like, quick, gather things.
yeah, it was just very incredible of it. Just like it was a reference to like a Greek ocean god, as well as like this idea of like sort of a proto like ghoulish creatures like haunting me. I'm just like, God, this is so thematic. Like, you've gotta prepare this beforehand, but no, it was just the 10 seconds of Google. Like, that is a very tough skill to like achieve. God, as well as just like giving me a advantage for unmarking my crowns and like how it seeing like transfer back to himself in sort of like this weird manic phase because like his brain wires is just getting rewritten as he's being sort of so pseudo possessed by the man in the sun mask. It was just, oh man, it was so good. I love it.
Yeah, I'll say I'll just throw out some quick stars because I just have nothing but positive things to say about this. I went into this, knowing I was gonna do something with the man in the sun mask, because I teased that because I was like, I have to get him in this campaign. If I'm making a bunch of Brindleverse references, I have to throw him in. And I didn't really know what that was gonna look like until like maybe like 2 hours before a session, when I had the idea of like, I don't want to go full Deus Ex Machina, so I will give Chaotic the choice of like, your character is on the path to death, so you can either choose to die but get a huge benefit from doing so, or you can choose to maybe have a new start and have the ability to start like making that happen. So I didn't want it to be a full get out of jail free card, but I wanted to like I was very happy with where that story went, and I thought that was a lot of fun. Yeah, I was inspired by the quote from a writing contest submission from for public access, where he says "Begone, Sycorax." I didn't want to just say that because that made no sense. So I was just like, "What am I gonna use for the Waitley?" So just yeah, no, just, your narration for going pulling out the camera in general and like in using that and accepting like all of my weird bullshit of like, if you do this, this cool thing will happen. You're like, fucking bet, okay. That was wild, and we got to tell a lot of fun stories there. And the details for that interstitial space with the stairs, everyone, that was very cool. The finale was epic as hell. Just overall, I have nothing but positive things to say about this session. Very happy with several moments that got starred throughout the entire thing through the chat, such as let me scroll up. I can't find it, but anyway, yeah. Anyway, but just a lot of moments just were golden. And again, just man, I'm overwhelmed because like I don't know how to focus on this session. I'm just talking about like this entire campaign in general. But yeah, this was just fantastic. This was a lot of fun. I liked everyone's epilogues a whole deal. And I don't know, just y'all really leaned into it at the end there, it felt like. So just getting, oh, and stars of the comment about like, it's like when your customized character has a cutscene and it just looks fucking weird and out of place. That was very funny. Yeah.
I've got a couple. I really liked Roddy's like the way B played Roddy when when Roddy is reunited with Hank. And I like that. I didn't know what Dallas was going to do when Wes was splitting the party, but it was just so cool for Dallas to go after Carnonos and just start shooting. and the way that Chaotic played, the way that you changed the voice of Mike, because in the last four or five sessions, like Mike is just like beaten. But with this new direction in life, like the way you just changed his voice and he was more assertive and just like upbeat. That was very marked. And then Star for Alex, just these end games are kind of hard because there's not a lot of like structure to them when typically CFB games have a lot of structure for the threats, but this is just like whatever you want to do, and the structure that you put to it was just really good. I really like some of the things that you did in terms of dividing up the questions and the clues. So a big star.
Wow. Yeah. As for this session, I think that's the stars, but unless anyone else had any other ones about this session they want to throw out there. Other than that, though, if you got the time to hang around with us for a little bit, I feel like we can but if you got to go, you're welcome to dip out. Let's just have like a little bit of like a campaign talk back of just like, this is kind of like the broader, it's not necessarily like stars, but you know, you just talk about the campaign in general of stuff, because this was a really fun experience, like from start to finish. You know, this was, like, I really enjoyed getting to run for this group and run this game because I have such positive feelings about White Mountain Rescue. And I mean, this game has shown how one campaign might go compared to like others, because when we started this game, I didn't have any inclinations towards Brindleverse fan service connections about, you know, aplenty. I didn't have any ideas about Prism. I didn't know that the Antler King was going to be called Carnonos. You know, there were times when I was just like, I was inspired by things that, you know, you guys had said in game, and where I, you know, in between sessions, I was like, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to take inspiration from Germanic and Celtic mythology and like give him the name of Carnonos and maybe allude to him being, you know, like a Wild Hunt kind of vibe. Like, you know, in Carnonos is a reference to Cernone. Carnonos is the Greek spelling of the Celtic god Cernonos, which was like a horned, antlered god. And the stuff with Prism just came because, like, I had an idea just out of the blue one day, like in chat, of being like, here's a crazy theory for like how the Brindleverse, you know, I was like, here's a crazy like Prism theory for like the Brindleverse concept. And I realized I was really into that. And I realized, like, what if I create something called Prism? And I talked to like Wes very briefly about it and like for the benefactor, and Wes basically was just like, I don't want to know what that is. I want it to be external. So you come up with things. So then I was like, cause I had alluded like Project Prism before. At that time, I did not know Prism was going to be an organization. I did not know that Lady Antonia was going to be the director of it. This is CFB Games in a nutshell. I just love like how much like the direction the campaign gets built off of itself, like towards like, you know, so if you, at the start of this campaign, I never would have, you know, said that we were going to go to a million Brindleverse references and fan servicey bits, and that Mike was going to be a Waitley, and that we were going to have the sun mask and the fragrant void and a bunch of stuff happen. I might never have that happened again in a White Mountain Rescue campaign. Next time I run a full campaign of this, it might be completely different. You know, nothing Brindleverse was baked into this. That's just me, you know, but I feel like it was really fun getting to explore on a very meta level all these connections to our community of CFB games. And I also caught references to the Silt Verses in some paint the scene prompts today with the Skyward Sprawl. I caught that. So even if it's not part of the Brindleverse, I like the broader acknowledgement of CFB within our meta cosmic kind of climactic adventure. I was just, man, this was a lot of fun. You know, I have a lot of thoughts about this game, you know, and things I'm sure that like, and I'll probably be chatting with Daniel about, just because I'm like, mechanically, I have like thoughts and all that too. But just overall, like the variety in kind of where we started and where we went, I just really liked it. It was very weird, but it felt like it was born from our table versus just being like, this is prescriptively the setting and what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, I gotta say, Alex, this campaign is masterclass about what you can do with campaign arcs. I've personally seen quite a few keepers that have struggled with like incorporating the table's ideas with like the idea of like the campaign arc, but you are just like very on it on every time of like reincorporating previous like rescues of like having them be dangerous throughout the campaign, because like stairs, man, oh my god, fighting for my life. I really, really enjoy that, and personally, I think like a lot of the CFB games could use a little bit more keeper support in that regard. But so like about like how you come back to like your campaign arc, about like how you incorporate moments from a campaign arc, about how you incorporate ideas that you have and rewrite your overall arching mystery for the final session. Like, I think there can be a lot of support in that, but like you really showed out what it looks like in practice, and that is something I find a lot of folks struggle with. Even Jason, to some regard, I think could like do it. And this is, and I tried to do it myself, but sometimes I feel like I fall flat on that. And this has really, really sparked about an interest about how to practically express that going forward in my own campaigns.
Well, it ultimately just came down to like, what do I think is the most fun and cool way to end this? You know, I was just like, thinking of the entire campaign. I mean, like, again, like, I understand, like, there's a lot of, like, there's something to be said about providing a little bit more, like, explicit advice on the page. But ultimately, all the stuff I do as a keeper, just a GM in general, just boils down to, like, I don't know, what seems fun and cool and weird? And that'll just, like, honor the campaign in some way. I try not to overthink it. That's kind of, like, my thing. It's, like, I'm just, like, I'm also, because I'm kind of lazy as shit sometimes. So I'm just like, how can I get the most return on the least amount of investment sometimes? You know, I'm just like, let me just recycle a bunch of things and take this cool idea and throw it at the wall. And then my players will come up with cool shit on their own during the session. So I don't need to prep that much. Like, not to like, first of all, thank you very much. That means a lot to me. Just truly, I'm just like, I just like recycling, like taking things and just like letting it cook in a weird way that is out of my hands. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of freedom in that, of just being able to like, just it's the rule of cool, of just being like, it's cool, I want to go with this, why not?
And you're so good at the rule of cool. I have to say, everyone at this table is. I would have to. It was real. It's really fabulous. It was incredibly, like, you're all so quick at this communicative sort of collaborative storytelling that this kind of game requires. And it's fabulous to see what the start is and where it went. And everybody's character building was all very different. Your different character arcs were really different. And Daniel, this is a beautifully written game. Like, I obviously didn't get to see what the keeper saw, that side. I just got to see it from a player side. But I really love how smoothly it transitions from the mundane to the fantastical. It didn't ever feel like you jumped the shark. In this, it always felt very correct. And I think that is the game's writing, and also the way Alex handled it so smoothly. It was fabulous. And I really love this kind of game. I love these kinds of characters of this very practical group of people having to do some wild fantasy shit. It's really cool. And I really want everyone to play this. I know I've said it like at the end of every single game. If you're watching this, please play White Mountain Rescue. It's so, so, so good. Oh my god.
I can't remember who said it, but I remember someone saying, I think it may have been like Michael Van Vliet or someone else, but like saying, just like, as like someone who's not an outdoorsy person at all, it's like playing this game, it's like, oh, I get it. He's like, it evokes the feeling of like the great outdoors and the love for it without necessarily needing to understand it yourself. So.
Yes, absolutely. Like, I like to do outdoor stuff, and like having done some of this, it feels very real, but it also just evokes it so perfectly. It's very cinematic. It's very evocative.
I've never been to Maine. I've never been up there. I've not been that far north, but like, I felt like I got it. Like I got the vibe really quickly. And all the different kinds of rescues and stuff. It was all like just teetering on the surreal, but you always, this idea that we can always get a mundane answer to, like if there's not really a Yeti, it's a dude trying to trick people and he goofed up really bad. Like that sort of balance of giving the players and the keeper control of how fantastical to get win. It was really, it's really, I could prattle forever. Somebody interrupt me. Or don't, I'll keep complimenting everyone and how fabulous you are.
I've got a bolt here in a second to go pick up my kid from school. But
yes, go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead.
I think, and I don't know how much, Alex, I don't know how much you realize this, but there's a lot of Alex's fingerprints on this game. We didn't do the trapped spelunker, but it's based on Ted the Caver, which was Alex's idea, and I played it with my other group, and that was their favorite. That's their favorite rescue. Oh. But it's just so freaking, you're underground, and it's just so it was really scary. And the vanished Ellis, that's totally Alex's idea. And actually, I didn't finish it when we first started playing the game. I don't think, because it wasn't on. We didn't have like a it wasn't part of the keeper. Yeah. So yeah, Alex, your fingerprints are all over this, and so I really appreciate that.
I haven't written a thing for this game. I'm just an idea generator, so I occasionally just tell Daniel things, and he ends up putting it in the game.
Yeah, you're
they're good ideas. Yeah, they're good ideas. And I can't remember if it was you or Jason. At the last retreat, said, "Don't make all the." I think it might have been Jason. He was like, "Don't make all the rescues like in the woods. Like break it up, do other things." And so I tried to do that. And so there's a river one, there's a cave one, there's a mountain climbing. There's a bunch of different ones that we didn't do, but they're not all in the woods.
Oh, it's so good. I love this game, and I think you did a fabulous job, Daniel, and I love your ideas, Alex. That's so cool. I love that you incorporated them, Daniel. The Vanished is a really cool playbook. That's super sick.
It expanded my ideas of the game, because like seeing the Vanished, I was just like, and the Out of the Woods stuff for it, I was just like, oh, this directly influenced my ideas for like what we're going to do in the finale. It adds a really cool, weird layer. And I like that it's an optional playbook that can only be introduced if you want it to be. I know you got a bolt here in a second, Daniel. So I just want to say again, thank you sincerely, not just for playing this game, for making this game. It was an absolute pleasure. I enjoy seeing where this goes next. So, thank you for joining us on this ride. And since you got, you know, we'll have Wes share their thoughts here on call. But for now, I just want to say thank you for joining us, Daniel.
Really, oh yeah, thanks, guys.
It. Yeah, thank you, Daniel. Now that Daniel's gone, I get to brag on the game so much, but comfortably. No, I love this game. Yes. This game completely represents everything that I believe that TTRPGs can do, which is take something so mundane, which is like essentially take like what if I take something so mundane and make it just like unforgettable. I can't take my eyes off of this game because it begs the question. It asks, I don't think even without intention, but it asks the question for me personally, what game would I choose to get my parents into TTRPGs? And it's this, because it takes the feelings of like a CBS original drama series, like Chicago PD or something like that, or like Chicago Fire or something. Mm-hmm. But it's like, yeah, White Mountain Rescue, like it's the U.S. Forest Service and everything like that. But like, make it weird. And it also hits, I mean, it hits the Firewatch vibes perfectly. Oh, it yes. gets Twin Peaks in there a little bit too. There's a lot of like Twin Peaks vibes. And I just, I love like Portals to Another World and shit like that. That shit's so cool. It's Eldritch. It's like, what the fuck is going on? You get to do like weird, like, our biology but fucked up kind of stuff that I love from like the Southern Reach trilogy and everything, or like the air, yeah, like
Like, I mean, this is not new for this campaign. This goes back to our Between campaign, Wes, but like, my Man in the Sun Mask voice is just directly lifted loosely from the G-Man from Half-Life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just have his inflections, Dr. Freeman.
I do those inflections for his voice because I'm like, I like the weirdness of this, like, entity. Like, and so, like, and I love pulling from things like Twin Peaks and other, like, sources for inspiration because, one, it offloads prep, but it also is just fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, but, like, this feels so, like, I think what we played was like a high level version of this game because we're connecting it to the other Brindlewood games and everything. This is like very much because we're all fans of that stuff. And so we're just like, yeah, let's throw it in here. It makes sense. Let's have a good time with it. Like there was no like Alex holding a gun to us and being like, dude, this multiverse shit. I know they've done it with Across the Spider-Verse and I know they're doing it to death with Marvel, but do this shit. None of that happened. We're all like,
we're on trend.
We're on board. No, like it makes sense. It fits the vibe and everything because there's connections like that through all the other games and everything. And like, I don't know, it's really fun to be able to play that with this group of people, but this game is completely fucking different when another group plays this game. Like I'm watching, there's people playing it and talking about it in the channel completely different game. And then like how they're reacting and things are just completely different. And I love it. And this is completely different from our like little 1-2 shot thing that we did at the writing retreat with it.
Yeah.
Completely. And so it's fantastic. And it makes it, I can't wait to play more. I can't wait to play a rookie. I can't wait to play the, I'm getting too old for this shit veteran. Like I want to play the warden, like the fucking, like the, the like hot shot, like has a TV show type of guy. That's like the cowboy of the group and everything. Like, yeah, like that stuff is great. This game fucking rocks, and it rocked the entire time.
I gotta say,
characters were fucking dead.
Dallas was an experience in this game.
Oh, like, I loved Dallas.
Can we talk about Dallas Bartmoss for a second?
Can we please talk about Dallas Bartmoss for a second? Like,
holy shit! Just like one from the prepared level of presentational corporate douchebaggery, like was so enjoyable. But like, it's just like there's so much Dallas, but like. Genuinely whiplash, and I mean this positively, character whiplash, because like he was, you know, they were constantly going in different directions, but not in a way that felt incoherent to the character. Yes. Like went from being like kind of just a douchebag to being like kind of sinister to being like at times like genuinely like a sympathetic person, and then also at times utterly ridiculous. Storms into the palace of a fucking extra dimensional god being like, you know, I represent prison and you're all under arrest. Like,
that's so good.
Dallas not knowing any, like, what is the protocol for this thing whatsoever. It's just like, fuck it, we ball.
And actually, this brings up a different question, not related to Dallas. B, you have the least amount of CFB experience of the group. And like, it was just like, I'm so fascinated by your perception of not just this campaign, but like, we did so much fan service references to things you haven't played yet. Like you have, if I recall correctly, you haven't played The Between. You have no experience with the Waitley camera, the Man in the Sun mask, all these callbacks. I'm so fascinated by like your thought process on being kind of like a bit of like the person on the outside to all of these references. Cause like, it seemed like, you still like got as excited, if not more, for them than the rest of us.
It took me about 2 seconds to realize when something was a reference, not just because of the reactions of everyone else, but because there was a certain like flavor to it that I could tell you were weaving in from other stories. And then I started recognizing like, oh, this has already been referenced here. And it's more this like, I was so excited about how masterfully like smooth it was done. It felt like it was baked into the world. Like it never felt like you were like pulling from something that I was like, that doesn't make any sense. What the fuck? And so I have this outside knowledge of these things. I obviously know I've read the books. I haven't like played it. So it's not this like super deep knowledge of it, but it's more like,
I was very excited to see how you crafted this multiverse because I know that's really hard to do in a smooth way. And then I got to see how everyone else used this because they've all played these big campaigns and they're like, oh, I know what, not only who the Waitleys are, I know what the Waitley camera is, and I'm going to do some buck wild shit with it because I know what it is. And oh my gosh, that was just so cool. So even as an outsider from the CFB experience level, being a real noob here, it was really cool. It was really cool. And it made me excited to play more of it. Like, it made me really, really, like, I obviously want to play more of these games. Like, it's a fabulous system. Everyone go play a CFB game. But, like, it made me more excited to dip into those other multiverses, those other stories.
Fun fact, yeah. Just as a side tangent, Kate, I'll let you go off here in a second. Just regarding the word multiverse, I am somewhat multiverse, like, I don't like using the word because I feel like it's just been so overused.
Yeah.
And it's like, but at the same time, it's like, I wish there was a better word for, like, the kind of, like, multiple extra dimensions, different worlds, different realities thing that felt more cosmic and, like, eldritch than just multiverse. Funny enough, this is where the joke I did two sessions ago with the PRISM presentation of what's the M stand for that's classified, when I made the PRISM acronym, because I made the acronym first. I made PRISM. I was like, what does that stand for? And then awesome. I was like, Paranatural Reality Investigation Sector, that alone. And I was like, what the fuck does the M stand for? And, like, you know, one of our, you know, a fellow community member, friend of mine, Steph, in the Discord server, who I play public access with. So, like, of the multiverse? And I'm like, yeah, I guess that's technically true, but also I don't like the energy that brings to it. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. So I have actually never solidified what the M in PRISM stands for. So I've just leaned into that by being like, that part's of is classified. Of these, I think that's classified. So one day I'll figure it out.
They have a special word that's not multiverse, but it means multiverse, and it starts with an M. You don't need to know it.
Yeah.
You don't have the security clearance.
So anyway, go ahead, Kat, with whatever you're going to say.
Yeah, I think, like, just general, like, the reason why it works really well and seems very cohesive is because, like, many of, like, the writers for CFB games are, like, the same few people. Like, Jason has, like, written, like, all, like, majority of the publications, like, for Wood Bay, The Between, Public Access. He was also a principal writer for Ghost of El Paso, along with Daniel, who initially started Ghost of El Paso. He was the editor for The Silt Roses. Like, again, like, we see, like, a bunch of, like, people who wrote stuff for The Between, also wrote stuff for Public Access. It's cohesive because, like, the same community is engaging with all this material at once. I think this particular game, I do agree, like, it's accessible to, like, parents, because, like, not only is it is the, like, least weird of, like, the CFB games, it's the least horrifying. Like, even Brindlewood Bay, like, late game Brindlewood Bay is super scary. Like, whereas this, like, it felt spooky, but, like, a lot of, like, the spookiness
but it's
came
like
from
more
you
in this, it's like, it's also, like, the more of, like, the Stranger Things kind of horror. Yeah. Like, it's, like, extra dimensional, but, like, not necessarily, like, you know, Cenobites, you know, Hellraiser kind of. It was, like, it's, like, we're dealing with, like, very cool, like, 80s, like, extra dimensional Jim Henson kind of,
I was about to say, yeah, it's that high fantasy. It's, like, heavy metal. I don't know if you've all seen that.
Heavy metal.
Heavy metal 100%. Is what I kept going back to. Like
Wizards 1977, yep. Heavy
yes.
metal.
Yes.
Yeah. It was like I think like the major like terrifying aspects were just coming from you, Alex, rather than the game itself, because I can really see like a lot of the horror elements being cut out of this game and the game still working.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, whereas, like, at a certain point in Brindlewood Bay, I don't see that working if you try to remove a lot of the horror elements. So, it's a very interesting take, and I look forward to more CFB games experience, like, doing genre shifts.
Yes.
Because, like, I'm interested in it, but, like, I'm not sure where it could go outside of, like, the mystery genre.
Sure.
Because I'm very curious about it and very nervous.
Well, we know it can work extremely well for heists because we got Planet Raygun coming out soon.
That's true.
Enough that it made me start rethinking a lot of stuff about Good Girls Go Bad, which is just the show Good Girls, but with demons and heists. Yeah.
What?
Like,
oh, love it.
I need to do intend to do a full campaign of Planet Raygun at some point because it's just, I'm also so in love with that system.
It's so good.
Oh, wow.
It's so cool. Oh my gosh. Yes. I could gush about this game and this group for.
Group was a delight. Absolute delight.
Oh, the dynamic. Everybody is so good.
I mean, I just love playing with Wes and Chaotic by default because I got to do Brindlewood Bay and the Silt Versus with them, and I've played other games with Wes a bunch. This is my first time playing with you, Beanar, and I fucking love playing with you. Holy fucking shit.
Oh my God.
I'm very excited to continue to game together because I thoroughly enjoy having you at the table.
I thoroughly enjoyed being here. You're all fabulous. You're a great keeper. You're all great fellow players. You're all so fun to roleplay with. Daniel, this includes you when you're watching this later. You're all incredibly fun. Like, just absolutely love improving with you. Ugh. Ugh.
Any other thoughts, talk back anyone wants to throw out there before we bring this overlong episode to a close?
I don't know, man. Somebody buy and publish this game, dog. Please. Put it on shelves.
I want a physical copy so bad.
I want to be able to buy patches, like Boy Scout merit badges.
Please.
That are like styled after this shit that have the different playbooks or something involved.
Oh my God, yes.
I want this to look like a wilderness survival guide, but there's also, you know, it's like I want this game on my shelf.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah. Please. Well, anything else from anyone?
That's it.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for watching. Thank you, my players, for playing. This has been White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace. Let us wave goodbye.